Hey, everybody, welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I am back again with Dom. Dom, how are you?
I'm not bad. I'm feeling some kind of way. How are you?
Dom, it's 2018. Are you not full of excitement and cheer for this new year that's upon us?
It is 2 weeks into 2018, okay? That's long since dissipated by now.
Yeah, I've seen the, every day on Twitter, I feel like I get 20 different versions of the here are five different events in various, levels of significance, and it's only January 12th or whatever. And I guess to totally date this podcast at right off the top, that's the point that we're at when we're recording it. But we are back, of course, to talk some more Big Brother 7. And today, we are going to be not quite wrapping up our podcast coverage of it, but certainly talking through, the remainder of the game that we haven't hit yet all the way through to the end. And we are thrilled because joining us to do that with us, our old friend, Mike Bloom. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing well. I don't know how I feel about being called an old friend. I like to think that I'm still young at heart, but I'm especially happy because I have a feeling that, you know, as a reformed man whore, I feel like I guess I've been brought in to talk about what exactly a homance is, since that term was dropped many, many times over the course of these four episodes.
I was definitely waiting for an opportunity to use that reference about you, Mike. So way to get in front of that one.
Can I just at the top here say, give a quick shout out to the great and not late Daniel Reyes, who, despite what Colin may have replied on Twitter, is alive and well, as far as we know. It's like the Big Brother fan equivalent of the Hawaii missile alert from yesterday.
Yeah, I was going to say that, like Colin was talking about the five events that you hear about every day in the news cycle. That was one of them for a portion of time, is that you guys were unintentionally made a Daniel Reyes death hoax.
Oh, man. Yeah, this is what happens when you don't proofread your tweets, Mike. I cannot stress enough. Don't be like me. Put thought into the things that you tweet.
Oh, but that's no fun.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Mike, you have been doing a lot of tweeting these days, just in general, but you have a lot going on as far as covering a lot of different reality shows and, you know, not only Big Brother, which you are now officially part of the media for. And I want to get the backstory on all that, on how you went from, from Big Brother fan to officially part of the Big Brother press now. But you have a ton of shows that you're covering at all times. What do you have going on right now, and where can people be finding what you're doing?
Oh, good. Get all the plugs in early so we can send this podcast by a significant portion of time. So the main two reality shows that I'm covering right now are Top Chef and The Amazing Race, both of which I'm doing podcasts about in the Rob Has a Podcast universe. And I'm also doing Exit Press for Parade as well. Additionally, I'm covering SNL. I do a movie podcast with AJ Mass called The Hamster Factor that has 50 episodes in the backlog. That's a lot of fun. And we actually just did some Black Mirror coverage as well, to almost mirror, if you will, the great stuff that Dom has put out in the past couple days. So, you know, it's sort of a question of what off season for me, but I'm happy to keep busy in these cold wintry months.
Yeah, we were saying just before we came on air, I was wishing Mike a happy off season now that Survivor is on its winter break, and he made the good point. They're like, there really is no off season when you're Mike Bloom. But of course, loving all of what you're putting out, and of course on Twitter at a Mike Bloom type. But Mike, before you were a Big Brother media person, how did you become just a fan of the show?
So, believe it or not, my origin story is very similar to Paul Osleson. I know you, that's completely unbelievable at this point. I came into Big Brother during Big Brother 3. I'd sort of obviously been a big Survivor fan, and I had been reading online about exactly what Big Brother was. It's so interesting to me because the more I sort of explore not only mine but other people's reality TV origins, I feel like there's a difference between your first seasons and your formative seasons, if that makes sense, especially if you started at a young age like I did. I started watching reality TV when I was 10 years old. I can't necessarily say that I really knew everything that was going and understood everything that was going on in Survivor, Africa, and Marquesas. So I would say in terms of my Big Brother experience, you know, I've started watching since Big Brother 3, didn't really follow the live feed recaps until around like 5, 6, and 7. And I would say those are really my formative seasons. So, you know, 3 and 4, I've gone back and watched sporadically, and so I've gotten a better sense of what was actually going on there. But it was really when Big Brother 5 and 6 kicked around that, like, that's when I really started to get my head around the show, and that's when I really fell in love with it. It didn't just become, you know, me passively dating Big Brother. Now I really felt passionate about it.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Not just being the typical man whore that you're used to being, right?
Exactly. It's not just sleeping around. There was actual, you know, feelings behind it. I didn't not just a homance with Big Brother.
And to illustrate that distinction, I think you have this entire new generation or infestation, I guess, of Big Brother fans whose their first seasons and their formative seasons were 16 through 19 and OTT. And that certainly comes through in the way that they interact with the players and other fans, to put it mildly.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I feel like you know, there are definitive eras in Big Brother. Like, there aren't any reality TV show. It's interesting that you bring up, like, 16 through 19, because I feel like Big Brother 15, and, you know, I'm a pretty big defender of Big Brother 15. I feel like the way you guys are to Big Brother 9 is how I am to Big Brother 15, in terms of opinions and covering all aspects of the personality.
That's
like
lofty territory, my friend. Big Brother 9 is an elite season of reality TV.
Oh, boy, yes. Elite in an environment where there was literally nothing else to watch. But the Big Brother 15, I do feel like was the first sort of breadcrumbs to this giant loaf that is modern Big Brother. You know, that's when they really expanded the cast. They expanded the number of weeks. They started throwing in, okay, here's some twists that deal with the nominations, putting in really more of an America's vote that really played out over the course of the rest of the era. And, you know, I'll also admit something right at the top here, which might get me further castigated by your fans, is that, you know, I'm a big proponent overall of rewatching reality TV shows for a variety of reasons. It's nice to sort of take your head out of where you were at the time. Watching things week to week versus binging things has a different sort of way to take everything in. I am not a Big Brother rewatcher, really, and it's for a couple of reasons. One, I think the number of episodes is just very weighty. You know, when you rewatch something like Survivor or The Amazing Race, you're dealing with like 12 to 14 episodes. Here you're dealing with twice as many to sometimes three times as many episodes. And there's just so much to watch over the course of one Big Brother season. And on top of that, you're only getting a partial amount of the experience via the show itself. So you almost have to, like, when you rewatch, sometimes you need to, like, have the show in one corner and the live feed updates in the other corner to see what exactly was going on. So I've been deterred from rewatching a lot of Big Brother, but I'm so happy for this opportunity and the podcast that you've been doing overall, because again, since we've been so, we've been so shrouded in this modern Big Brother for so long, both the good and the not so good aspects about it, to go back to the last, arguably the bastion of the Arnold Shapiro experience has been so much fun and just a great reminder as to, again, you know, how I started to fall in love with the show.
Yeah, I can testify to all of that for sure, because Big Brother 7, it keeps the quality so high and it never really loses that momentum. So you can make it through all of the episodes without really getting distracted at all. But I've been sporadically rewatching Big Brother 3, and that is, by consensus, one of the best seasons. And it's a season which I think certainly deserves a lot more attention than it gets. But even that, it certainly drags to some extent. Like, when you're on episode 20 and half the cast is still there, you start to wonder what you're doing with your time. It's echoes of Australian Survivor in its lesser days.
Yeah, well, I've actually personally always thought of Big Brother, even while I wouldn't say it's even one of my favorite shows ever, and it's certainly not by, like, the modern, you know, these modern seasons are nowhere near that. I have found even some of the more recent seasons, probably not in that, like, post-16 era, but 16 through 19 kind of era, but 15 and previous, I have always found Big Brother to be tremendously rewatchable and very easy to binge. For whatever reason, it is a show that flies for me whenever I rewatch a season, and I've rewatched many old seasons of Big Brother, and actually, kind of like you, Mike, I am, like, a fan of Big Brother 15, and I feel like if I were to sit down and watch Big Brother 15, all 90 whatever days of it, that would go faster for me than sitting down and watching, like, Survivor Nicaragua or whatever.
How dare you? There's wild and crazy things that happen in Survivor Nicaragua.
Well, to use an extreme example, obviously, from Survivor, but I have always personally found Big Brother, for just the formula works for me. The way that they can time the competitions and balance that with the character segments and the big results happening, like the votes and evictions, for whatever reason, I have always found Big Brother, while I can also find many faults with it, rewatchability and bingeability have never been flaws that I have found.
It's so interesting because, I mean, the storytelling is inherently different as well. Maybe that's sort of what you're speaking towards here, Colin, where there's a huge difference between knowing exactly what's going to happen ahead of time and really editing things on the fly to sort of just create a mini arc almost every week. And sometimes longer term narratives do end up paying off, but it's really short term storytelling versus long term storytelling. Mm-hmm. Even looking at this final week of Big Brother, you know, I wonder, had it been somehow a situation where all of this played out before the season actually aired and they knew Mike Boogie was going to win, how things might have been differently told. Because really, even leading up to this week, we get a lot of Will taking credit for all the moves. And I feel like when the show inherently wants to build up its winner to sort of produce this quote-unquote satisfying ending, I wonder if in a world somehow where they knew everything beforehand and edited the show to sort of tell that story, how much they would sort of take away from that and then give more credit to Mike Boogie to play it up more like a partnership and less of a alpha and beta marriage of convenience type of thing.
That's actually a really interesting point about Big Brother seasons in general that I think a lot of people were bringing up after Josh won this most recent season, after the whole thing had been edited through like the lens of Paul, where, you know, and Josh, I'm sure they would have made look much, much, much different, especially during the early portion, if they had thought there was any prayer he would go on to be the eventual winner. But when it comes to the case of like Will and Mike Boogie, I think you may be onto something, that the show would tend to err on the side of giving Will the credit for doing things, even though, as I've hopefully not gone overboard, but tried to bring up when I noticed them, I feel like Boogie has a ton of stuff over the course of this season that he does extraordinarily well. And I'm sure we'll talk about a lot of that as we get into how he ends up closing this out here.
Yeah, there's also the other side of that coin, that some people do argue that Boogie, if anything, received a better edit than he deserved because he was in so tight with Will, and because the way things were unfolding, it was never really possible to distinguish between Chilltown as a unit and what Will and Boogie were doing individually. So even if Will, in reality, should get a lion's share of the credit, if he was doing 90% of the stuff that had to be done, you would never really get to drill down into, okay, Will did this, but Boogie wasn't there for that conversation. So like you just can't parse it in that kind of way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there definitely are elements of their game that can be a little tough to separate, which I think, you know, maybe in true Survivor historian fashion, I'm sure we'll touch upon the legacy of Mike Boogie's game. The immediate legacy, though, was definitely of, you know, it's really tough to separate Will's game from Boogie's. And you could argue that one of the reasons that he won is because they said, well, you know, he's the Chilltown representative and we need to give Chilltown a win here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sure we'll dive much more into Boogie and his legacy as a Big Brother winner and where Will fits into all of that as we dive further into the game here. But before we get into the rounds that we're going to be talking about, Mike, last time we had your fellow Survivor historian on with us, Paul Osselson, who is Danielle Reyes' number one Supremo fan. And as a Big Brother 3 origin story person yourself, we lost Danielle last week, but I would love to get your just general Danielle Reyes takes before we dive in to the Final Four and beyond.
I mean, again, apologies that I might just parrot some things that the three of you have said over the past few weeks. I know you've been talking a lot about like best confessional givers. I might quibble with you that I think Will's number one, but I would slot Brittany Haynes in as number two, considering that essentially, when your diary rooms get you $25,000 as an America's favorite prize, you got to be a pretty damn good confessional giver. But I think Boogie's up there. But Danielle is just, I mean, she's so freaking charismatic. You know, I think she just exudes it from a natural perspective. And I think that's what lets her do really well in the game. And she had a really big roller coaster journey. You know, I was definitely fearful when the season started again, the only other season we could compare it to was Survivor All-Stars when, hey, look at all these winners and really big players are going to go early. So I was really on pins and needles for that first for the pre-jury phase, being like, all right, the other shoe's going to drop. Like, Danielle's going to go, Will's going to go, Janelle's going to go. And the fact that she was able to make it to the jury, I feel like, is a big accomplishment. Now, you know, there are certainly things that she could have improved upon, but I really think everyone this season could have done that. I think it just shows how the level of gamesmanship, or at least the amount of gamesmanship going on. It might not be the most high quality from a lot of people, but everyone was at least playing the game, which makes for exciting television. So, I mean, she really is a perfect package of a Big Brother character and player, and it sucks to not see her make it to the end again, but oddly enough, I feel like her season 6 appearance almost like improved her legacy, as weird as that is to say, in that we got to see her do some more stuff. We got to see her, you know, play more under the radar and then also have this Black Widow moment where the overall legacy of Danielle Reyes is now just not encapsulated by, oh, she made it to the end, but she, you know, she burned people too much. Now it sure shows that she has a little bit more tools in her toolbox. So even though, you know, it sucks to see her go out in that manner, especially, you know, Erica getting completely snowed over by Chilltown, I thought she was such an integral part of the season and arguably probably about the second or third maybe best player of this season, which, again, nothing to sneeze at considering how high the level of gamesmanship among a lot of these players is.
Yeah, totally. And we've talked about, in particular in our last podcast, about how if a couple different competitions just break different ways, Danielle is probably in there as a pretty big favorite to end up winning this Big Brother All-Star season in a spot where she probably should have come in there as one of the most known commodities and biggest kind of priorities for people just based on her first season. Like, I would say Danielle was probably in like the Rob Sesternino going back on Survivor All-Stars kind of role, where like everyone should know, of course, be on the lookout for her, and she still went in there and was a very effective player.
Yeah, I would say that Danielle and Nokomis kind of both shared mm-hmm. that title mm-hmm. of like best to never win, and I think that, you know, what happened with Nokomis could very much have happened to Danielle if things broke a different way. So, you know, maybe the horcrux of the, you know, Rob Sesternino Voldemort-like comparison I'm making, one got killed, but one survived long enough before it eventually got burned in the fire.
And Danielle, to be clear, did not get killed, okay, people? We don't need to keep propagating that myth. Mike, what was your take on Danielle's last week in the house, where not just the maneuvering by Chilltown that led to her getting evicted by her best friend, but all of the drama of that week, which was really captivating to watch, just Danielle outside the HOH room, buzzing on the door, yelling to be let in, Will doing his best inside the room to like keep Erica from going insane. What was your take on that entire week?
Yeah, it's the other thing that I really enjoyed about this as well is that from an emotional perspective, we got to see different sides of Danielle. And it's almost akin to something we see in this round where, you know, when Will sort of has that random talk with Boogie about, okay, you know, the girls just went inside to open up some wine, I'm going home. And there's this genuine, at least from my perspective, 3 seconds of panic from Dr. Will, where he tells Biggie, like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what I can do. And for the first time, I think, in Will's entire Big Brother career, the charm isn't on there. It's not circuitry and wires. There's a moment of legitimate fear and panic in his voice that he is things are out of his control and he could be going out of the game. And I feel like we got something very similar here with Danielle, where, again, she was in so much control over the course of season 3. And you could argue that, you know, with the exception of maybe week 1 and the time that Chilltown threw the graveyard veto to Janelle, I wouldn't say she was in complete control, but she at least had a sense of what was going on. And it's so interesting to see how these big players react when they're cornered. And it can sometimes get pretty ugly. So when Danielle is just verbally berating Erica, you know, it's a pretty ugly thing. It's interesting that, you know, when in the final HOH competition, when they say, you know, Danielle said the most embarrassing part of her Big Brother game was, or the thing she feared her family would, you know, didn't want to see on the show was A, being drunk, or B, you know, being blindsided, crying and getting put up. And she was most embarrassed about being drunk, about being in that moment where she was clearly pretty, you know, deep in the sauce there and just went after her. The side of Danielle that I personally not really seen before outside of, you know, the Roddy and Kiara stuff that happened in the midst of season three. But from a characterization perspective, it's moments like that. And the moment I described before where Will felt, oh my God, things are finally out of my hands at this point, that make it so captivating to watch.
Yeah, as I said, I've been rewatching Big Brother 3 on and off, and Danielle, that season has some amazing characters, but Danielle, I don't want to say carries the season, but she is the highlight for sure, and it's been great just to see her in her original element again, doing her thing. And it is striking that outside of that one argument with Laurie in the first week, at least in terms of the edited show, that's the one other time in her whole Big Brother career where she really loses her composure. She goes almost two entire seasons without ever showing that kind of vulnerability again. And then when she does, it's in the midst of her greatest, like, personal and game-centric crisis within the Big Brother house.
Yeah, I mean, and it's also because I'm assuming everyone in the Big Brother All-Stars house decided to wash their hands before handling the salad. I think that's really the thing that gets stuck in her craw the most.
Well, we saw when Chilltown was making the decision to blindside James, Will, I believe, said at one point in a confessional, he's like, this is largely going to come down to how we believe Danielle will react to this. And Danielle Reyes is a consummate professional. And we do see her when that happens, even though she's not thrilled about it, she does maintain her composure. And then come finale night, still be willing to she's one of the people advocating, we have to vote for the best player. We cannot make this personal.
Yeah. And you know, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but I feel like she is fantastic in the jury roundtable. And it's so interesting because this jury roundtable brings forth a lot of modern Big Brother or modern reality TV topics that are still talked about to this day.
Well, that's because Will's running the discussion for the jurors.
Yeah, exactly. That he's the constant, really, in this equation. But, I mean, I know a lot of people talk about Rachel Riley was the one to really to really go forth to the masses and give out this message of the being a floater is bad, and her definition of the floater is more so like BB12 Kathy, whereas, you know, June is a different type of floater. And I think Danielle brings up a discussion here as well about how, you know, Janelle is actually the one, even season before Rachel Riley did this, Janelle was the one to come into the house and be like, Eric has a floater, she sucks. And Danielle's like, what's the problem with floating? You know, what's the difference between, Marcellus brings it up too, what's the difference between being a floater and having multiple alliances? And Danielle brings up, again, something that's been talked about a lot, especially given the results of the recent Survivor season, about the double standard that comes sometimes with gender and playing a cutthroat game. This idea that Erica and Boogie played the same game, which I think we could definitely discuss later on as to whether there's validity into that. But, you know, because of Erica's gender, there might be some attributing to it as why people were calling her, like, disgusting and a scrub and, you know, whoring herself out to get further into the game, whereas Boogie might get, maybe not from certain hosts of The View, but Boogie overall getting a little bit more credit and a little bit more of, like, hey, fist pump, you definitely schooled her, man.
Yeah, I cannot wait to talk about Paul brought up that clip of Rosie and Elizabeth Hasselbeck on The View the morning after the finale, I think it was, with Mike Boogie, Janelle, and Erica. And I was going to bring this up at the end of the show, but it shouldn't be put off any longer. That is amazing. You should pause this podcast right now and go and watch it right now, because it is that good. And it would, like, I think, honestly, I might attach the entire 8-minute segment to the end of this podcast, and it still won't do it justice. Picking and choosing from that segment, really, you couldn't get the full experience. And even the full audio, I don't think, would do it justice. But we'll try. I'll put that at the end.
Seriously?
Yeah, let's do it. Why not? People, yeah, not everyone's going to look it up.
Or at least the beginning portion where, like, Rosie, and now I can realize, like, as, like, a member of the press now, what Rosie does is completely subjective, whereas you can tell that Elizabeth Filarski Hasselbeck is, like, very much in the host mode of, like, all right, let's, like, make everything, let's try to look at everything with an objective eye. But I guess that's sort of what Rosie brings to The View. But oh my God, she talks about, like, you know, Chilltown having this 12-year-old mentality, but between giving her the, like, going in for the handshake and giving him the too slow thing, making a big to-do about, like, oh, I'm not going to sit next to you. I have to sit all the way over here. I mean, not to say that Mike didn't deserve it, but I also want to give the credit to Mike Boogie for, like, biting his tongue to essentially, after winning $500,000, one of the best moments of your life, being verbally berated for basically 10 minutes on television about how bad you are as a person. I think Rosie was expecting like a fight to break out, but Mike just sort of sat there and took it. So again, you know, I can't completely excuse, he said a lot of really bad things, especially in this last week, but you know, dealing with the aftermath of it, I think he was actually pretty good in receiving that vitriol in particular.
She was so intense, I didn't even register that quiet blonde over there in the corner was Elizabeth Hasselbeck, who, yeah, it turns out is a host on The View for some reason. So, yeah, it's a really impressive clip. And I'd say I'd link it in the show notes, but none of you read those anyway. So just go to YouTube and type in The View Big Brother and it'll come up, and just immerse yourself in it, because it's really worth at least one watch.
Yeah, more accurately, type in Janelle Erica Boogie The View, because there are probably plenty of times that Julie Chen or whatever was on talking about Big Brother. Was she ever a host of The View, Mike?
No, I mean, the talk was the...
Oh, yeah, of course. The View is on... What is The View even... Was that CBS or ABC?
ABC.
Okay. Yeah, I guess neither here nor there. But yeah, people must find it. I may or may not put the entire thing at the end of this podcast. we'll see if I remember. But Mike, let's dive in to the more recent stuff in this final four round here, because I want to get your take on the makeup of this group in particular that has assembled into this final four, because around the middle point of the season, we started hearing about Operation Double Date, and that was going to be Chilltown's plan. And now with the end game approaching, it seemed like he was really trying to pit, that they were really trying to pit the girls against each other, particularly at this final four, where they need them to be evicting each other in the case of one of them winning the veto. But what did you make of just how all of this came together, where we have the showmance between Boogie and Erica? It seems like a legitimate showmance for a while, at least. We have the flirtmance between Will and Janelle. We have the bromance between Will and Mike Boogie. A lot of mances, honestly, just dictating...
We also have the, I don't know what you want to call it, but whatever the relationship is between Will and the backyard camera, which we which we somehow forgot to talk about last week.
Oh, such a good moment. The botmans, maybe.
Also fantastic. But it's interesting, because not only the game makeup, but also just the episode makeup just frames everything in terms of two just pairs interacting now.
Yeah, it's a very interesting dynamic that I don't feel like we see a lot of. Maybe like Big Brother 18, and we actually ended up with three pairs in the final six. Usually, I feel like it's like a three-on-one mentality, or there's just a lot of like individual games going on. But there are such, you know, I feel like Big Brother 7 overall is a season about pairs and about, you know, picking your... To use a Big Brother 19 adage, you're my ride or die. And for some reason, you know, people tend to... not necessarily target the pairs. Instead, they're going for these sort of stragglers. I mean, talking about the final four in particular, I am not someone who usually ships reality TV contestants. I'm fine with showmances, but
occasionally, but not usually.
But I mean, I was the biggest Winnell shipper. they might be the only like outright showmance that I was like rooting for, like, yes, get together, true love must persist in the Big Brother house. And I thought that if I approached this several years later that like my opinions would change, but they're just so cute together, guys. Like, I can't help but buy into it. I don't know if it would work, if it would have worked at all outside of the house, but just between like them being two really big characters and outright quote unquote legends of the game, and then just being able to like not seek each other out as competition, but actually find a kindred spirit amongst one another, it like warms the cockles of my heart for some reason. And Boogie and Erica are sort of there too. But yeah, I mean, I like a lot of America, and Nokomis in the BB final admits, I was rooting hardcore for a Will and Janelle final, just because, again, in the context of reality TV All-Star seasons, we saw Survivor All-Stars when you're like, okay, we got this really fun cast. How the hell did Rob and Amber end up being as the final two? So I'm like, okay, we actually have a chance of having the arguably the best physical player and the best mental player up against each other. How the heck is that going to shake out? That's going to make for a really interesting outcome. We're not going to get that, unfortunately, but that was yet another reason why I really threw my weight behind, you know, the Will and Janelle coupling.
Yeah, I wonder about the Will and Janelle thing. I think one angle to it that I think made it really like so like the chemistry so strong is both of them having relationships back at home and kind of knowing and us knowing that they couldn't really at least in the Big Brother house act on it, and having that kind of dynamic I think really made it more fun seeing them going back and forth. And Will, like, my all time favorite Will line might honestly be saying to Janelle, on a scale of 1 to 2, you're a solid 1. And she like punches him and gets so mad, and clearly they want to bang right there on the spot, but they can't. And I think that's what makes it so fun.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much teasing. And actually, that's the moment that Rosie O'Donnell, going back to her, likes to point out, where she showed her a freeze frame like, oh, here you are with Will with your boob on his shoulder.
Yeah. So Mike, there are some people who argue that Will ends up losing the season only because he wasn't willing to take that relationship any further with Janelle, and her anger over that is what leads to her turning on him. Do you think that's true? And then if so, does that suggest that Will has a stronger, I guess, like ethical or professional limit than even Mike Boogie does? Because you think with the two of them as a unit that Will would be the one who would be willing to go all out to make sure they win. But I feel like Boogie was more desperate for that win, given that he hadn't won before, and Will was looking towards the outside and the relationships that he did have outside the house, and he was much more cognizant of that than Boogie ever had to be.
Yeah, Will was, it's weird to say because Boogie is such an over-the-top character, but I almost feel like Will was the one of the pair who was more cognizant of the cameras, quite literally, in one case that we mentioned beforehand. But I think it's interesting in that, you know, you talked about this moment before with the food competition where they're dressed up as bees, and Will's talking about, like, that's it, my practice is done, no one's ever going to take me seriously anymore. I mean, he was probably he had the loftiest profession, I think, going into Big Brother. So I think of everyone, he was very, very aware as to, you know, how things were going to be perceived on the outside, and even outside of, you know, how his girlfriend Erin would perceive things, you know, like how would other people look? I mean, look, considering the lambasting they gave Mike Boogie, how do you think they would give it to Will if, like, he's fooling around with her? And going back to your original question, Dom, it's something that I thought of as well, and I was going to bring into this podcast too, so I'm sort of glad we're on the same page there. It's really interesting because we'll definitely talk about Janelle, and I know that Erica describes herself as an emotionally driven player, but Janelle very much is as well, to her, you know, to her credit and to her debit. And I do wonder, you know, if Will really does romance Janelle, you know, would she be able to sort of break that trance again with Erica and say, like, no, Will's playing me? Or do you think, you know, her previous showmance was Michael, who went out in week 2, but I don't think she was necessarily thinking of, like, oh, he's not playing me, I'm going to, you know, he's going to be my number 2 in this house. I do wonder if, you know, if Will had reciprocated something, or if something had gone on, as weird as that is to say, would she have sided with him a little bit more? I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I guess this is the downside of Operation Double Date as a concept, of when you're letting people come further with you in the game based solely on this this chemistry that you have with them. If they ever have any reason to doubt that, it's not like you can talk them out of it. You know, Will, there's no argument that Will can make. He has to rely solely on his charisma. And if that's what's in question here, if Janelle is starting to see through that, then there's really no hope of clawing your way out of that. I think you can tell with Will, he knows that the exact moment that his game ended, when Janelle invites Erica inside and they break the wine out, you can tell, as you said, that 3-second clip where you see genuine panic cracking that veneer for the first time.
Yeah, we say that, like, the way that goes down is Chilltown is out in the backyard, like, lifting weights while Janelle and Erica are talking on the sofa, and I think they can sort of overhear what's going on. And this is, I think you're right, Mike, to bring this up early. And I think we're fine to just skip to this now. And we can talk about whatever we want to bring up from the competitions later on. But now that Janelle has the veto, and is going to be the one casting this vote at Final Four between Will or Erica, when they go inside, as soon as the door shuts, Will says, "Okay, Boogie, that's it. I'm going home." And Boogie says, "Nope, you're good." And he says, "Yep, she's opening the wine. There's no eye contact. That's it." And I think you are totally right that Will knows in that moment, that's it. I've lost. That's the end of the game for me. And the same way, I think later on when Mike Boogie wins that final HOH and knows, okay, I can just cut Janelle and I'm about to win Big Brother. I think this really is like the one point, honestly, in Will Kirby's career where he feels and looks like totally vulnerable. Like he knows the jig is up for me. We just never see that out of him.
So I would say in a lot of reality TV competition, especially in Big Brother, when somebody gets eliminated, you can attribute a certain amount to what they did wrong and a certain amount to what somebody did right. Could you guys like come up with a percentage of like for Will's boot? What percentage of it was Will playing this wrong and what percentage was Erica playing this right? Because I feel like it's both, but I've been trying to weigh, you know, which one was it more so that Will should have, again, like strengthen his connection with Janelle? You know, I think he was warning Mike on the live feeds that like, we're pushing these girls into each other. There's a good chance they might start comparing notes. Or do you think we should give Erica some more credit here with really giving the pitch to Janelle that, you know, they've been playing us the entire time. What they were telling you, they were telling me. There's no guarantee they're going to take you to the final two.
I would give Erica a lot more credit if she had done that prior to Janelle being her only chance of staying in the game and it being her pitch to stay alive, essentially. Like, if they had gone into the Final Four and she had said, "Okay, Janelle, these guys are clearly playing us both," and they compare notes at that point, that's a bit of a different story to me. But when it comes up only after she knows Janelle is the only way she can stay in the house, I have a hard time giving Erica as much credit for proactively taking her fate into her own hands until she thought that the game was virtually, you know, pretty close to lost unless she did so. That said, I believe pretty firmly that Chilltown really got their spot blown up in the most immediate way possible once the girls started talking, because they used, seemingly for the sake of good TV or just comedy or whatever, the exact same script on both of them. And they could compare line for line. This is what they said to us. And that seemed totally unnecessary and almost like serving solely to humiliate the people that they were doing it to. And I do think they could have done things of that nature a lot better. Yeah, Dom, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I'm inclined to agree with you. Erica's goodbye messages by themselves, I think, tell a fascinating story this season, when so many of them are gloating about her role in getting that person's out, disproportionately so, when that person doesn't seem to think that she had any part in that at all. And then Danielle's is the one exception where she is still tearing up, still trying to beg the person who's leaving to understand that for what it is and forgive them. And Erica, like, she wants to take credit for these moves that she makes, but no one else wants to give her the credit for them. So with that in mind, like, I think if you asked Janelle and Will and Boogie, I don't know how many of them would give Erica herself any credit for that either. So yeah, because even in that moment, Janelle and Erica team up and they have this moment together, but they still don't like each other or respect each other. And you can tell even the next week after Janelle gets evicted, she is right back to arguing against Erica in that jury segment. So I'm inclined to not give Erica any more credit than all of the other people in the house gave her. But maybe I'm off base there. I don't know.
I would say that this is Erica's flashiest move, if that makes any sense. I do feel like Big Brother 4, again, from what I remember, you guys are much bigger BB4 fans than I am, so you probably remember better. But I think she had a pretty underrated game there in terms of, like, she had a pretty, even though she was very out in the open with Jack, I feel like she was only a couple of competitions away from really winning this game, which you do not see necessarily in Big Brother All-Stars. But you bring up such an interesting point here, Dom, about, like, the way she takes credit or abdicates credit for some of these moves. And it carries over into this jury questioning where her main talking point, I would say basically her only talking point, is this Will blindside. And while I don't necessarily like disagree with her, and I feel like some people can win the game by, you know, making one quote-unquote big move, one big-time move, even though you can't really call it a big move if you're like backed into a corner. You know, you're not really stirring that much up, considering it's really your only option, as Colin was mentioning before. But it's so interesting how, again, as you mentioned, Dom, you know, in her goodbye messages, she's like, yeah, I was the one doing this, with the exception of Danielle. But the one move that she takes the most credit for, and is basically everything she talks about in her jury questioning, is about getting rid of Will here. To the point of where, like, she's pretty sniping about it. You know, she's trying to come across like the sassy, like, Janelle almost, or Rachel Riley of like, revenge, baby, bye-bye, bitches. But it comes across very differently, yeah. At least from the way that I saw it. Again, maybe it's just because I'm biased, because, I mean, I love, love, love Will Kirby, and I remember reading this on the live feed updates and then watching this on the TV show. I was just, I let out like a Revenge of the Sith-esque no, just because I'm like, this is, that can't be happening. It's because of stupid Erica, who doesn't even deserve to be there. And now I've sort of like taken umbrage with my past self for those comments. But, you know, I feel like the way Erica handles this and the way she sort of gloats about it, I don't know why. Maybe it's just the delivery, but it comes off differently than the way that not even like Will and Boogie, but even someone like Janelle can brag about, like, I blindsided this person, I connived to get this person out.
Yeah, we see right after Janelle ends up evicting Will, Eric, you know, Mike Boogie sitting in the other nomination chair, just kind of, you know, very shaken up, I suppose, because Chilltown was apparently legitimately blindsided by that, and Erica walks past him and goes, checkmate. And I think that was pretty indicative of Erica's attitude near the end of the game, and perhaps her inclination to maybe give herself more credit than was necessarily due for that Will boot.
And there's I was going to say, too, I think it's James that she does it with, when her goodbye message is to the effect of, there's only room for one ultimate floater in this house, kid, or something like that. And it's like, are you even trying to win his jury vote? Who are you trying to convince her?
Well, the thing is that it goes back to what you guys were talking about last week with Paul, with which Erica even vocalizes, that she's an emotional player. And I do think that all this post-Will stuff is 100% emotional. Because remember, she is furious at Chilltown. She feels like she was played the entire time. She's the one who vocalizes to Janelle, like, everyone's watching us and they're pointing at us and laughing at us and thinking that we're stupid. And so, like, I think she just sees pure red at that point.
I think she also likes the poet. Sorry, Mike. I think she likes the like poetic symmetry of having Boogie's best friend evicted the way she did to Dan, the way they did her and Danielle.
Yeah, it's weird because, again, I don't want to skip too much farther to her, the jury questioning, but again, when she really makes this big statement, she's like, when going into this show, I knew I had to take out the puppet master, but he was surrounded by all his puppets. I'm like, okay, Erica, that's one person on the jury, but there are six other people on the jury that you could be talking to, you know, and she's saying, so what did I do? I got my showman to put up his best friend, and I got his best girl to vote him out. And you're really only responsible for one of those, because the first one was by default, just because there were four people left. But I mean, I'm super glad we're talking about Erica as well, just because I feel like, specifically on the Survivor Historians, I feel like we sort of unintentionally do this, but I think we like to focus on the games of the runners up. Just because I feel like in the pantheon, we usually, with the exception of, you know, people who arguably get robbed or, you know, other big characters, we don't talk too much about the games of the runners up. And so I think it's interesting to sort of hone in on Erica's game in this particular podcast, because she was definitely had the lowest win equity out of the final four. You could say she might have had the lowest win equity out of the final six, even, or the final seven. But I mean, she was not going to go down without a fight. And, you know, I think it's just that pure emotion, again, that led her to say, you know what, I'd rather lose to Janelle then lose to Chilltown, even though she'll then completely go back on that once the final HOH comes around.
Yeah, well, Mike, first of all, I'm sure you'll have no issue with talking about the losing finalist game as you talk through Samoa and Heroes versus Villains. That pattern should definitely be changing.
Oh,
and now, I'm sorry, I already forgot what I was going to say that was Big Brother related. So, Dom, you go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that some people, and I stress only some, because we've seen people lose seasons because of this before, I think some jurors can grudgingly give respect to someone who is that superior in the way that they treat them, if what they're saying is actually true. Like if they're lording it over you for having got you voted out. If they did get you voted out, then okay, fair play. Maybe you give them some credit for that. But for Erica to do that when no one seems to agree as a basic axiom that she had anything to do with it in the first place, it's like she's getting the worst of both worlds. She's getting the blowback from having voted them out without the credit from having voted them out at all. So
And I think it also like has to deal, you know, I almost compare Erica to like, spoiler alert for Australian Survivor. It's somewhat comparable to Christy, you know, to this idea of like, here's someone that people weren't really thinking about that much, who was in danger a couple times but was able to skirt by because there were bigger relationships available or bigger targets available. But it all depends, again, on the way you deliver and the way you frame your game. Christy has this incredible TV moment, which people might agree or disagree with, but she spins a narrative that people actually buy into of like, I had impetus behind all this. I was behind all this. Erica just isn't able to necessarily do that. I mean, Will has a statement, which Danielle, as I mentioned before, is going to take umbrage with, but he says, you know, I can respect the game that Erica played, but I can't respect her as a person. And it's that idea of respect, like you said, Dom, that I feel like is always going to be, no matter what your criteria for voting for someone to win is, it always comes down to respect. Who are you going to respect as the winner of your season, as the representative of your season? And I feel like if Erica treated things differently, maybe, and maybe if she was sitting next to somebody different, she could have had a better chance, but she wasn't respected both, you know, the way she was playing and also the way she was handling covering her game and describing her game to other people.
Well, do we have any theories about what Erica may have been able to do differently to get that respect? Because, you know, short of like, maybe don't put up and evict your best friend at Final Six.
That's a start.
Or, you know, don't play super personally and don't be so mean to people as you're evicting them, or like work harder to win the jury over. But I guess I'm asking the question tactically more than socially, because it seems like you're right that Erica came into this at least Final Four, probably much further back than that, drawing essentially dead. But what really could she have done to change that? Because I don't know if there were many timelines, frankly, entering, you know, on day one of the season, entering the house, where Erica could really do much to win people's favor and like take control of the game and end up in a position to win. Do we have any speculation about like where she decidedly went wrong or anything that could have been what explicitly cost her?
I mean, when it comes back to this idea of respect, and again, I'll go back to Australian Survivor as an example, one of the reasons that Christy was able to benefit from the jury as well is the fact that she was sitting next to someone that people did not respect, that they felt that you were a hypocrite, you were playing this honor and integrity cards when you really weren't necessarily doing that. So I'm trying to sort of think about the cast and think of like, who would she be sitting next to that might get that? Maybe, and again, we're drawing out such fan fiction here. Maybe if for some reason Kacer comes in and he is still preaching this like integrity, you know, I wanna play to sort of honor my family, my religion, but he ends up like playing a very, very bloodthirsty game and just cutting people's throats and betraying people left and right. Maybe if she's sitting next to him, maybe she could get the votes that way. She needs to sit next to somebody who is also not respected. And that's tough with this cast. I mean, this is a very, very good cast where even like people had such big reputations coming into this game that it would be really tough to find somebody who the jury would not inherently respect and say like, well, I mean, you did this and that, but at the end of the day, like, you played this game, and so I have to give you my vote because of that.
So I think the obvious candidate that people always point to here is Chicken George. Now, in that clip from The View, which you might hear over and over again at the end of this podcast, just for 40 minutes on an endless loop, you hear Boogie continue to give that line in public, saying, I was worried about going up against Chicken George because he needs the money more than any of us. And one of their greatest achievements, I think, during Erica's HOH week was convincing her that Danielle beats everyone except Chicken George in the final two, which it still baffles me that any part of that sentence can come together. But in any case, do you think that actually has something to it? Or is this the same kind of thing we saw with Derek, where even after his season for years, including on his podcast with us, he was adamantly maintaining that, of course, Victoria wins if she makes it to the end, because we all would have upheld this pact when no one else seemingly... even some of Derek's biggest fans believe that.
Yeah, I do wonder, because I do feel like you could certainly spin something with George where, like, someone could say, like, hey, George didn't need to do anything because we all took each other out. And a part of me feels like Erica could have made a statement like that as well of, like, you know, I didn't need to win competitions. I didn't need to do this because I was aiming everyone at each other. I was whispering in people's ears to, you know, go after one another, and nobody came after me. I was nominated 3 times, but nobody actually looked to evict me. And I think that there is some legitimacy in that argument that you could sort of attribute to George as well. But at the end of the day, as you mentioned before, the jury for the most part was so pro, we need to give this to the best player. This is for the best of the best, or arguably just the better of the final two, because I don't really know if we're looking at Boogie and saying, oh, yes, this is going to be theoretically the best Big Brother player of all time because he beat the best of the best. But you want to give it to somebody who really represents the game aspect very well. And I guess from that regard, George is certainly likable. And I would say one of my big takeaways from rewatching this season is I just forgot. I fell in love with Chicken George all over again. I think at the time I was watching it, I was such a big Chilltown fan that I just thought he was innocuous or sometimes like got in the way of things. But for me, it's so interesting to, and this is not a knock on any modern day reality TV contestants, but it's so interesting to find someone so genuine on a show, you know, where, not to say again that people are coming in there with like canned lines and complete artifice, but it feels like George is someone that really harkens back to those old school days of reality TV where he is just plucked from, you know, a little suburb in Illinois and brought into this house. You could almost say the same thing about someone like Lauren River. And that's one reason why I think a lot of people loved Lauren, is that, like, they just seem like a very natural person, which, again, you don't find too much considering how much reality TV is going on these days. And that's what really made me love him, not necessarily for the fact of his gamesmanship or, you know, all of the big moves that he was making necessarily, but just the fact that, like, he seemed like a guy that was so happy to be there and genuinely liked the people that he was with. I loved the dopiness of why he kept calling Will Doctor like it was his first name for some reason. You know, all the stupid Mr. Fort costumes and the sombrero that he wore. Dom, I know you talked about this countless times in your previous podcast about how he feels like, you know, a fan had gotten place in the game. But there's just such... It's weird to say, but like the episode 3 veto ceremony, which definitely I'll agree with you guys is probably the best one in Big Brother history. You remember Will's speech, but George's speech is like the complete opposite side of the spectrum where it's essentially like, I love you all. It's him saying, you know, I am so flattered to be here. We should all be so flattered and lucky to be here. We were chosen to play this game and we should enjoy the hell out of it. Essentially. It's so freshening to find that type of person from reality TV where it really does feel like this is a normal person that I can bump into on the street. Now, going back to the original question, I don't know if he would win.
Well, at the end, when they're all casting their jury votes and the live audience is there, of course, Will and Janelle get big applause when they come down. But Chicken George also in that same pantheon, like they're the three people who get like the huge rounds of applause when they get called on for their jury vote. So I think, Mike, you were certainly not alone in your love of Chicken George.
Yeah, especially when he almost breaks the key box.
That was so
when
funny.
He's trying to put the key in.
That was such a perfect send-off for George. He like fumbles his key and almost breaks the thing.
You know what it is? Chicken George is Jerry Gergich from Parks and Recreation.
Yes, that's exactly right.
And that just makes me so bad. Maybe that's why, like, I think that now I realize why I loved him so much is because he's Jerry between the farting and, you know, this like the bumbling around, but like the positive attitude in the face of all negativity. I think that's why I love George so much.
That's perfect. Yeah, absolutely. So I guess we can quickly touch on Mike Boogie won the Final Four head of household, which essentially, as we all know by now, is just immunity. Janelle won the power of veto, which means she's going to actually be the one making this decision here between which of Will or Erica is going to end up leaving. And before that decision gets made, I want to quickly touch on Will seems to openly throw this power of veto competition at Final Four. Dom, what is your take on this? A spot that I can't imagine we have ever endorsed throwing this competition before.
Yeah, throwing any kind of competition like that at that late stage in the game is pure hubris. And for as much as I love Will, I also love seeing people like Will overreach and get undone by their own arrogance. And so as tragic as this ending was, I don't feel as torn up about it inside as I know some of Will's other diehard fans do.
Right. I think it may have been like you can't lose if you're not trying in his mind. Like he didn't think he was going to win it anyway.
Yeah, and to be fair, it's very much like Tim Dormer in Big Brother Canada 4 of like, oh, no, I threw this because I couldn't do it. But, I mean, you know, I also don't know how well he would do because considering he didn't remember who Allison was and thought she was Jennifer Aniston, like he probably did not have a good set of studying going into that competition.
Also, I will say for this Final Four HOH comp, that this is one of the first, maybe not the first, and I'm sure the Big Brother historians out there can inform me when the first competitions like this were. But this is something that we see very commonly nowadays of a pure information-based competition. Like you can study for this, and if you cram more than anyone else, if you have all this information on tap, you're going to win. And like we saw, Kevin Martin is maybe the best example of this, just winning 8 back-to-back competitions like that to put together the biggest comp streak in the history of reality TV. This is the kind of thing which, like, if Will loses a physical competition, then that argument comes into play of, okay, he was going to lose anyway, so why even embarrass yourself by trying? To lose a competition like this is unforgivable in my book. Like, that is an actual mark against your game in a way that losing most competitions doesn't have to be.
Speaking towards Chiltown's possible mistakes in this round as well, I know Will offered himself up as a nominee to Boogie because it didn't matter. As you said, it's all just sort of like pomp and circumstance. When the veto plays, that's when things actually get determined. Do you think if Boogie does end up nominating Will and Janelle, do you think that like possibly puts Erica closer to his side in another universe than she doesn't necessarily? I know she'd still be up on the block, but she might think that, okay, maybe I won't go campaign to Janelle. Or do you think that no matter what was going to happen, the two of them would still compare notes?
This is the same takeaway that I actually had, which is when those nominations don't matter, in watching Boogie pull Will's key out of the box, I think I had the same thought, Mike, which is this was essentially a free roll spot to make Erica feel more comfortable, even though she should also know it doesn't really matter. Like we've seen, I think it was in Big Brother 11 where like they really tried to make it seem like, you know, like Kevin and Natalie tried to make it seem like the Final Four nomination meant something to like Snow Jordan. I thought this was an opportunity to potentially try the same thing in a spot where there's literally no downside. And I do think that it reminded me of in BB14 when Danielle Murfree won the Final Four head of household. It took Dan Giesling no time at all to say, put me and Ian up, keep Shane off the block, make him feel as good as possible.
Yeah.
And then course correct in dramatic fashion.
That's the other thing I wanted to ask as well. Could Janelle getting rid of Will here, is that like the biggest Final Four turn until Big Brother 14? Because I've been trying to think about it, like between you have this and you have Big Brother 14, I can't really think of many other, maybe like the Renegades getting rid of Keisha at the Final Four instead of Jerry in Big Brother 10, but I can't think of many other Final Four turns, just because again things are pretty well set in stone that those three really stick out as like big bombastic moments that happen so late in the game.
So you also have the Brigade getting rid of Brittany, which came as a surprise to her, but obviously wasn't to them. You also have the guinea pigs blindsiding Sharon.
That's what I was going to say, is the biggest Final Four turn prior to BB14 was the turn by the producers to say that the guinea pigs counted as a pre-existing relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
To
they knew
prevent
each other.
Sharon from winning that HOH.
Yeah, the biggest crime by guinea pigs until crocodile, some would argue. But the thing about this Final Four nominations by Boogie is it's almost like because they don't matter, that gives him the excuse to be sentimental if he wants to be. Whereas if there was some actual strategic benefit to who you nominate in that round, then of course he just follows through with that and he doesn't even bother to not put up Will because it would be fitting to have Will's name come out of the box.
Like, but that's the point, though, is he's saying in a moment where all that matters is sentimentality, Will is the person I want to be sentimental towards, and it sends the message to Erica, I'm not taking you.
Right, which certainly doesn't help. But what I'm saying is he can only trick himself into doing that because nothing else matters, seemingly. And it, as a result, he makes that matter in a way which it never really should.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if he could also play up to Erica, like, because Erica's going to say, this is where I went home last time. You know, this is when they were still, like, fudging with how to use the Final Four veto. That's when Allison won the quote-unquote diamond power of veto, even though it didn't really matter at that point. And it sent Erica home. So clearly she's very traumatized by this, much like the aforementioned Kevin Martin was during the triple eviction in BB Canada 5. And so maybe Mike could have taken advantage of that as well. Like, listen, I didn't want to nominate you outright because I know that this was a very bad situation for you. Let's see how the POV plays out and move on from there. Again, Erica would still be in the same nomination spot, so who knows if she still decides to protect herself by going to Janelle with this information. But maybe this, you know, pushes her away a bit from immediately going after Boogie. Maybe this was already starting to set things off in Erica's head about, okay, it's very, very clear that, you know, I am, you know, there's no Big Brother baby that's really going on here. And I'll also say, in terms of Erica's edit in these past few episodes, I know we were sort of talking up how much she gives too much credit to her game, but I feel bad for her, especially this first episode with all of the showman stuff. And it keeps coming to Erica being like, essentially, I'm in love and it's perfect. You know, she talks in an earlier episode about the fact that she was just in a relationship for like 5 years with Josh Suzuf and Big Brother 1. And like, she is clearly in a very emotionally vulnerable state. So I think it makes sense that she sort of falls into the first pair of arms that sticked itself out for her. But at the same time, like, it's to have her talk about how much she cares about Boogie and then cut to Boogie being so piggish about it and so, you know, asympathetic towards her. Again, that's probably the reason why Rosie O'Donnell and a lot of people went after him right after the show aired. So I do feel bad from an emotional perspective as to the way Erica is portrayed, even though I would argue that this final 4 week, from that perspective and from the strategic perspective, is essentially all about her, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think it's worth noting, the way it's portrayed on the show, even as Boogie is not as overtly into it during the early days of the Boogica showmance, it's certainly not made to look early on like he's just outright playing her. That really is a turn that comes much later on into the season, and his version is he said a lot of things in the diary room about 10 minutes after they blindsided him by evicting Will, and that really became the lasting narrative for something that I don't think was really in that spirit for most of the time.
Yeah, I know. So Mike, going back to what you said earlier about looking at the outcome of a season through the lens of the losing finalist, I feel like a lot of the best reality TV seasons are the ones where that not only doesn't detract from the quality of the season, but maybe offers an entirely new perspective to see it through. So a good example would be Survivor Vanuatu, which I know, like, your compatriot Mario Lanza is a massive Chris fan, for instance, and that season is amazing as the story of Chris. But I think it's also maybe less flashy, but also equally interesting as the story of Twyla and why she lost and the events that led to that moment. And equally, like, I love Chilltown. I'm glad that this season culminated in a Chilltown win. But looking at this, if you had this season remastered as Big Brother All-Stars through the eyes of Erica, I think you would still have a fascinating TV product.
Yeah, just because she was in on so much because of this quote-unquote floater status. And again, there have been reality TV contestants in the past who didn't do much for the course of the game, but turned it on at the end when they needed to and really, like, do a couple of big things and capture the votes as a result. And Erica did do that. I think, you know, in a different role, she was up against somebody else and was able to vocalize her game a bit differently. Maybe she walks away with a different outcome. But I think it's super interesting to just sort of look at things from her perspective where, again, even she knew that she was probably losing at this point, but she was essentially dictating who she was going to sit next to. And when you control the narrative, it's very much like Sugar in Survivor Gabon, where she's saying, okay, like, I know that I'm probably not going to win, but, you know, who would be better to sit next to at this point? Now, granted, you have you're picking between two members of the greatest reality TV alliance ever and one of the biggest competition beasts and fan favorites in reality television ever. So it's not slim pickings going on necessarily, but I think Erica was in a very unique position that we don't see a lot in Big Brother.
Yeah, well, I think Erica found herself in this endgame having spent a lot of time up on the block and other people essentially doing her favors by keeping her or just not making, you know, like she was constantly, I think, feeling like she was reaching out to people and hoping that they would have her back, where I think she probably, if she wanted a chance of winning near the end, would have been better served being in that like chill town position of constantly voting and helping people, you know, in their minds, keeping them safe and doing them a favor. And I think this is an issue for a lot of people in Big Brother, where come the mid game, someone does often become that pawn star. And barring the case of like Will Kirby, and maybe there's some more people from more recent seasons that I'm just currently spacing on, it really doesn't seem like the pawn star often does too well come end game time, because they just really haven't built up much actual political capital by just staying on the block and doing nothing forever.
That's an interesting point, because almost like what you were saying is counter to what Will's mentality was in season two, right? He said, I'm going to promise people the moon and back, but I also like to be nominated, because then I don't need to honor any of those promises. You know, yeah. I'm never going to win a competition, so I'm never going to go back on those deals. But if I promise to keep you in the house, if I'm nominated, I can't keep you in the house because I don't have a vote. And so you could argue, again, this is going back to a little bit of what Danielle says, that like from a different perspective and maybe arguably a different set of circumstances, Erica's game sort of mirrors a bit. There are brief, you know, DNA similarities, I feel like, between the mentality that she took here and Will took in Big Brother 2. And I think it's just a generally good Big Brother strategy. That's why, you know, I love the old school definition of floaters, because that's the way you should be playing the game. Drawing a line in the sand makes for fantastic television, but it makes for absolutely horrendous strategy. Mm-hmm. The best strategists are those that are able to reach across the aisle to multiple people and say, you know, I can work with you. I'm pliable. And one way you prove that you're pliable is to say, you know, like, to make these deals and to acknowledge that you can't necessarily honor those deals because, oh, my hands are tied. I'm nominated for this week, so sorry, I can't save you.
No, it's definitely a good point and a great strategy in general. I just, when it comes time to, I really need people to have my back actively and feel like they know they can definitely trust me, to make like a Survivor comparison, I feel like it's almost always going to be harder to switch alliances away from someone who you voted with several times. So like, say you're on a swap tribe and you just met this person and they seem like they'd be a better bet, but you just don't know, frankly, anything about them. I feel like that's often the spot that the pawn star nominee finds themselves in, is come endgame time, when now in the more modern seasons, competitions are so much of what matters, and having people who will actively look to keep you safe is a big piece of it. We see people leave that I would imagine would not leave under normal circumstances in like a lot of first or second rounds of the double eviction, just because they don't have people actively protecting them. And I felt like Erica fit that mold in this endgame.
I mean, she almost did go home in the first fast forward double eviction overdrive, whatever you want to call it, for that exact reason.
Yeah, exactly. But the person who was... go ahead.
And worth noting about that double eviction, it seemed like Will threw that final five HOH as well, which again is almost equally unforgivable to me. I just... Like, Will, if he could turn it down just a notch, would be legitimately untouchable as a Big Brother player. But he has to have that fatal flaw, because every superhero does.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel like letting Janelle get, if you know it's Janelle who's going to win, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. Like, Final Five HOH is a bad spot to be, as Janelle will, like, she had to win this power of veto to save her life. She was ineligible to play at Final Four.
Okay. I guess just ignore that and delete that completely, because you're right. I'm not going there.
It's fine. But let's get into the, you know, Eric is going to stay. Let's get into the person who is going to leave here by Janelle's vote. And that is, of course, Will Kirby. Mike, I'm sure in Dom and I will spend a long, long time talking about Will's legacy in our season wrap-up podcast. But where is Will for you in just the pantheon of all-time reality TV players? Because I would imagine he's relatively high on the list.
Oh, yeah. Him and Cerie Fields will always be tied for my number one reality TV contestants of all time. And it will never, ever be touched, probably, in my opinion, just because I think both of them are a fantastic mix of strategy, personality, comedy, like essentially everything that I like in a reality TV show can be encapsulated in these two people. Now, again, let's compare, you know, Dr. Will with his Survivor comparison, Richard Hatch. In these All-Star seasons, when Survivor All-Stars comes around, everyone, he had a huge bounty on his head. Everyone was looking to take out Richard Hatch. They were itching to do it, and we were very lucky that we got 5 episodes of Richard Hatch before he got taken out. So I, coming in here, I thought, okay, exact same thing is going to happen to Will here. And again, I am so pleasantly surprised that that did not happen whatsoever. Even the week that Will was put up, he was a pawn. James, for some reason, because Chicken George stuck out, as we mentioned just a few minutes ago, that one, that the only person he didn't have an alliance with, he went after him. And then Jace, who was another person that I sort of forgot about how much of a big presence he was in those first few weeks. So, you know, Will was never really in too much danger outside of that one time that Chicken George was going to put him up. And Boogie pulls that really great maneuver slash sort of blackmail slash threat without actually saying it's a threat, because it would be against the coup d'etat rules. But the fact that he was able to do so well, essentially playing the same game, is unbelievable to me. And it made it so much fun to watch. And I'm so glad he was such a presence in this season. In my opinion, this was his season. And maybe, again, going back to the very first thing that we said on this podcast, maybe it's because when it came to the storytelling of Chilltown, they almost always went back to Will rather than to Boogie. But they had this alliance that really made for such an amazing middle game by constantly flipping back and forth on people and cutting people. You know, he was always Mr. Personality. He had a flirt manse as well. You know, I would say that Big Brother All-Stars is Will's season, like Survivor Amazon is Rob Cesternino's season, where, again, they didn't take it at the end, but that's the person that they were talking about, that everyone was talking about once the season wrapped.
So that prompts what I think is the eternal question with All-Star seasons of how much someone's performance on them is indicative of their overall skill as a player on that type of show, or how much external factors come into play. So I know with Big Brother All-Stars, there are so many discussions about pre-game alliances and these deals to split the money with Erica or Janelle or other contestants. How much do you think that Will's, and I guess by extension Boogie's run on the season, reflects well on him as opposed to just the circumstances or these other things that might be coming into play from the outside?
That's a great question. Yeah, I mean, you do bring up the banana bread, and Dom, this is where you can splice in the clip of Apu being so indignant about the banana bread once he had the 8 children, because that's the only instance I've heard of banana bread on pop culture outside of it. But yeah, I mean, he had that, and you have this whole idea that you talked about in your very first podcast about, like, season 6 and seasons 4 and 5 essentially targeting each other from the beginning, so Chilltown was left out. But, I mean, I would want to give him the same credit that we sort of gave Danielle of, you know, when she stuck out like a sore thumb that first week, she said, okay, all I need to do is sort of play under the radar and just make it through, and then I'll eventually be able to find my hole and squirm my way into there. You could argue Will sort of did the same thing here. He didn't feel like he needed to necessarily say, like, all right, let's go after these people. He said season 6 is in power. Let them go after who they want to go after, but I'll try to, like, get my foot in the door. And it's still amazing watching back how they were able to convince Janelle to, you know, not put up Will and to instead put up Diane, which really I'd forgotten was such a fracturing point in that season 6 alliance. That really is the straw that breaks the camel's back for James. And so I would say that was probably their biggest move of the pre-jury, and then they're really able to turn it up once the jury hits. But I mean, I think they got lucky in that there were extenuating circumstances maybe coming in. But I mean, it's also they had a very big reputation, not only as a villainous pair, but also as a pair in general. I do want to bring up the question to you guys, because this, again, goes back to the final jury questioning where Boogie says, you know, we were part of a preordained pair coming in. So, you know, we were able to make it to the final four in spite of that. But Erica makes a point of, I came in here without someone. So therefore, you know, it was a tougher game for me to play. In these types of seasons, do you think it's tougher to come in as such a blatant pair of people? Or do you think it's harder to come in as a single and have to deal with other allegiances of people?
Yeah, for me, it really depends on who you are within that pair. So if you're Will, and by all accounts, you should have the biggest target of all time on your back coming in, then maybe that is a genuine difficulty. For Boogie, who I think comes in as the Amber Burkitt of the season, who no one is really paying any attention to, who is tied or shackled or however you want to frame it to this much larger player and character, you could say that he doesn't get the chance to establish his own game and to play by himself. But in Boogie's case, that might be a good thing. If the player you're tied to is the best player of all time, some would say, then that's a benefit. And I don't know that Boogie is harmed by that more than Erica is harmed from coming into a show where the only other people from her season hate her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like in Big Brother, for whatever reason, though, generally speaking, pairs are viewed as much more of a benefit to an early game alliance. Like someone's a free agent on Big Brother has a much easier time saying, okay, I'll link up with this pair and feel good about that for a while. Whereas on Survivor, it really feels like pairs, for obvious reasons, are almost always going to be viewed as big threats that, before it gets too late, need to be taken down. So when it as it pertains to specifically Big Brother, I think the general idea of being in a pair is not as bad as I think it tends to sound when we talk about obvious pairs on reality TV.
Yeah, and sort of to add on to eulogize Will here as well, I think you're sort of waiting on pins and needles to see, okay, this big player of the game is about to get taken out. How are they going to react to it? And again, this is sort of in stark contrast with what happens on Survivor All-Stars. Will takes it extremely well, much better than Boogie does. And so, you know, Will is very cordial when talking with Julie. He gives all the credit to Erica and Janelle for the moves they're making. And that, I think that just speaks towards this jury in general. I mean, Danielle, despite her meltdown, was very courteous. I feel like the only person who was not okay walking out of that house was Howie, who, whew, I mean, you guys were not lying when you said he does not play well in, you know, in 2017 and 2018, especially when we get into this. You know, Mario talks a lot about in the Historians about how there are some Survivor players who are really lovable as underdogs, but really hateable as overdogs. He attributes Boston Rob and Stephanie LaGrossa as two big examples of that. I will add Howie Gordon to that maybe as a third, in that, you know, his personal attacks and his sort of oafishness, I think, plays a lot better when he's in the hero position and going after the people that we want him to go after, rather than him screaming, "You suck," in Chicken George's face and just consistently berating people in the jury house.
Right. Yeah, we got a couple of jury house segments over the course of these last two episodes. One, as you mentioned, Will not only courteous beyond belief the moment after he's evicted from the Big Brother house with Julie, but also when he arrives at wherever the sequester house is that they had to get relocated to because Hurricane John came through the first one. Will is extraordinarily gracious there as well, even as Hurricane Howie is tearing apart that second jury house. Some very awkward, like, outright explosions from Howie aimed at both Marcellus and George, and neither of which, it seemed to me, felt like they were neither of Marcellus or George was really reciprocating that same energy. It just seemed like Howie, I don't know if he was putting on a show for the cameras for the hour or so that they were there that day, or what, or if that was something that was actually going on all the time, but it was extremely uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah, we're talking like BB18 Pauly and Davon levels of uncomfort. But like you said, I mean, Marcellus and George really don't reciprocate, but I mean, if you get Chicken George angry, you know that you are, like, completely in the wrong, in my opinion. And, yeah, I do wonder, to your point, like, one of the reasons he became a quote-unquote fan favorite in season 6 was because he had that big Busto rant. And so he, maybe he's thinking, like, you know, much like when Paul thought, oh, everyone loved the friendship and the piss stuff, maybe I should keep doing that. Maybe Howie thought, oh, okay, people like me yelling at people, maybe I should keep doing that. I do wonder, you know, how much of a quote-unquote bitter juror he really was, considering that, again, nobody was reciprocating those feelings. He wasn't really being fueled by anybody in particular. Everyone else was just saying there, like, yeah, dude, like, let me just read by the pool. Let me just hang out for the next couple days, okay? You don't need to keep drudging up this random blindside that happened.
I think Howie may have been going in feeling like, because it was essentially the same alliance as the previous season where his side could never do anything wrong, essentially, in the eyes of America, that may have been the mindset that he went into BB7 with as well and felt like no matter who he's yelling at, he's just automatically going to be viewed as the person who's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there goes Dr. Will into the jury house to hang out with Howie and the rest. We have the first part of the final head of household set to begin tonight. It's an endurance competition, so get the coffee ready. We're going to be here a while. Let's get everyone up on the volcano, grab onto the keys, and it's over, Mike. It's over before we even before we even go to the first commercial break. This endurance portion of the final HOH is over.
Yeah, I mean, this last, what, like 5 minutes total from when Julie says go to when Julie disqualifies Janelle. It is insane considering that the previous season was the hot box challenge that lasted like 10 to 12 hours or something like that. And yeah, as you know, a Janelle fan at the time, even though I was rooting for Boogie at this point to sort of like get revenge for what happened to Will, This does sort of suck to see her go out in this regard. The big comp piece to lose both parts of the final HOH competition and essentially lose the game right there. Because as I mentioned before, and Janelle talks about this a little bit when she enters the jury house, which was then confirmed on the feeds, Erica is going to flip back to Boogie, essentially. Even though her and Janelle had made the promise, and even though she vocalizes on the show that I made this promise, I'm going to take Janelle to the finals, at some point when it becomes her and Mike as the two going into the final part of the HOH, she basically tells him, I'm going to throw this to you, so you make the decision to get rid of Janelle. I think she hoped that, you know, she wouldn't need to break any, you know, if she was the one casting the vote, the other person, the person she voted out would vote against her, so she didn't want to get that blood on her hands necessarily. But Janelle knows of that, and that's what really makes her, I think, very, very salty against Erica when she enters the jury house.
I was wondering, if part two was like playing for the right to get Erica to agree to take you if she wins final HOH, essentially, like had Janelle beaten Boogie in part two, even like having that leverage of being able to make the deal with Erica saying, okay, we'll take each other, would have been enough to get Janelle the win.
Yeah, and you can say that Janelle losing any competition that she's eligible to play in is surprising to some degree. But in this case, it's not just that she loses part one, it's that she also loses part two. So going into part three, there's not even the suspense of if Janelle wins another competition on top of the 8 or 9 that she's already won this year, she wins the game. Is Janelle is sitting there on the sidelines, helpless, forced to watch as Boogie and Erica play for that final HOH. And as she has to know at that point, it's very unlikely that either of them is taking her. So there's no suspense for her either. She knows the game is lost.
Yeah, and I know you talked about this a little bit with Paul, that Janelle cannot be the best actress sometimes. She has this here when, after Boogie wins the final part, she tries to give her quote-unquote plea to him of like, listen, I've been really gullible this entire time, and Erica got rid of Will, but I think she knew it was pretty much sunk right there. I just want to go back briefly to like the aftermath of the Will eviction, because I mean, Mike is obviously stunned, and this is when some very unsavory things about Erica come out of Mike's mouth, which is very, very uncomfortable. But looking back, I mean, this was the best possible thing for Mike, right? Because he was never going to win against Will. He keeps talking about this like Chilltown Final 2, and then obviously going back to this banana bread idea, I think under the table, they're splitting it no matter what. But if it comes to Mike as an individual winning the game of Big Brother, it's definitely best that Will went out. Not only that Will went out, but Will did not go out at his own hands, correct?
It's tough just because of what a competition beast I would say Janelle is entering or any random final HOH. Like, I think he would rather have it be a final three of him, Will, and Erica, just to leave open the door for Erica winning final AHOH and taking him and him beating her. Like, if we're purely talking in terms of how Boogie wins the game. But you are right that a big problem for him winning would have been being in a final three with Will, where he's almost certainly going to take Will to the end, where he will obviously lose, which is not going to be a winning recipe, it goes without saying, for Mike Boogie there. Whereas if Will's not an option to take, he theoretically could have more doors open. I definitely do what you understand what you mean. Like, he's gonna know to take the goat. He's never gonna be blind. He's never gonna get misted into taking Janelle over Erica, for instance.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I would sort of, I know that Boogie did do some good things, but that's what sort of like gets stuck in my craw about his game, is that at the end of the game, his ideal end game was set up to lose, and he sort of ends up like, through extenuating circumstances, kind of back his way into winning at the end and being able to take the prize, just because, again, I sort of felt like, well, the Chilltown representative, he happens to sort of not be the puppet master, but, you know, he's there at the end, so let's give him the money. And I think that's also what a lot of people felt at the time, too, was that they felt that, you know, this idea of, oh, Boogie rode Will's coattails, and, you know, he had basically set himself up at that point where, again, in his ideal scenario, he would be sitting next to someone that he would ultimately lose to, and then when the goal of the game is to ultimately win, that's not necessarily a great strategy.
I think the thing that we should bring up that we haven't yet, we haven't explicitly brought it up, but it has always been my understanding, and it was further cemented when watching that clip of The View when Boogie talks about how he spent his money just by reinvesting in more restaurants that he owns. Will and Boogie entering this season are business partners, and I, like, overtly or not, I think they both knew we're chopping whatever prize, we're just going to invest any prize money that we win is going to go into our restaurant business, so it doesn't matter which one of us wins, and the best thing we can do is get both first and second place money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that would be, you know, $550K
I think Boogie is someone who would say, Will obviously is the best Big Brother player of all time. I'm fine with him winning as long as the money's getting invested back into our restaurants.
Yeah, that's true. Then he could afford so many more Dolce shirts. Oh, man. I'd forgotten how much he promoted his own, which is weird because, like, again, they definitely don't do that nowadays. Like, Paul, I'm sure, was not able to wear his own clothing. I know Netta was able to wear some stuff back in Big Brother Canada, but, like, considering how much merchandise Mike Boogie was wearing promoting his own restaurants, I don't know if that would fly nowadays.
I've told Ian Terry, I've demanded of Ian Terry that if he goes back into the Big Brother house, his wardrobe needs to be nothing but, like, iconic shirts that have been worn throughout Big Brother history, including, like, a Dolce shirt, a red Dan Giesling The U shirt, a Dolphin Crash shirt, a Suicidal Tendencies. Like, he needs all of these shirts to be his wardrobe for his future return shot.
Yeah, Andy's really dinky skeleton shirt with the heartbeat and the ribcage. But yeah, so going back to this final HOH competition, this is insane. And this is how, like, I love some of the live TV elements that happen on Big Brother, because, yeah, the competition starts, and then Mike says, "Hey, Julie," and you could tell, like, it takes like 50 seconds for the producer to be like, "Julie, I think Mike's talking to you." And Julie comes on, she's like, "Yes, Mike." And then Mike says, "You remember Richard Hatch? They both need to take me." And then just jumps off. And it's that one moment where Janelle's hand slips off in shock that also costs her the first part of the HOH competition. And I mean, who knows? You know, I think one of the reasons why Will want to get rid of Erica as well is because Erica, she's a Pilates instructor. She was going to do well in that endurance part no matter what. So who knows if it might have just been a foregone conclusion. But as you mentioned, it's insane that they built this entire gargantuan piece of landscape, which back in those days they rarely did on Big Brother, and it got used for all of 5 minutes.
Yeah, it was amazing. I always feel so bad for the people who have to set up and break down those giant competition sets, more in modern seasons now, because they really just deck the entire backyard out now for every competition. Back in the day, it was a lot less elaborate, but I felt horrible for that crew that had to spend all day setting that up for it only to be used, like you mentioned, for about 5 minutes. But to go back to the Richard Hatch of it all, Dom, do we have any idea why Boogie would think that both of them had to take him?
That was very puzzling to me too. And the only thing I could work out afterwards was that he didn't actually think that. He knew he wasn't going to win the competition. It's endurance against the Pilates instructor and the best competition player in Big Brother history. And he wanted to at least give this impression of weakness.
Yeah. And it can't hurt to make him think like, oh, maybe I should be taking Boogie.
Right.
Oh, no, it's a complete bluff. I totally agree with Dom.
I don't think he was hoping or expecting that Janelle would be so shocked that she would take her hand off and that single play might have won him $500,000. But it can't hurt if there's like a 0.1% chance of that either.
Yeah, I think that Boogie is very, again, shocked, much like in Erica with a very different way. He's very emotionally affected by the events that just transpired. And so he's sort of in panic mode. And he's wondering like, okay, how can I get between these two? And I think he's starting to play up like maybe the Danielle Reyes of it all, of like, oh, I took out all these people. They're going to hate me. This is why you should take me to the finals. I forget sort of the campaigning he was doing throughout the course of that week, but I figured he has to try something. And I guess that's the angle he's going to go with.
Yeah, I guess that is a good point. It had literally, I don't think, ever crossed my mind that he was doing it as a bluff. But that now that you've both agreed on that, that makes by far the most sense, that he just knew the odds of him winning were minuscule, and he might as well, it's like a free roll to make them feel like he's an easier person to beat or a better person to take to the end. So Erica is going to win part one in the span of about 5 minutes, as mentioned. Janelle versus Boogie in part two. This is a cool part too. It's done out at night, out in the backyard. It seemed like at night. It was dark. I don't think they had a giant ceiling over it. They get strapped into this giant rig that seems suspended a solid like 15, 20 feet high in the air. And they were directing laser beams through like a series of mirrors with each sequential Big Brother winner's name on it in order. And it made me realize, and I'm sure you had a similar thought of like how funny it would be if they ever tried to run a competition on a modern season that required knowing literally anything about a previous season, how long that would take.
Especially now that we've had 19 seasons worth, if you had to chart the exact correct path, like you would still be out there 10 years later. Right? The competition would never end.
Well, the question is, would you count OTT in there? Like, would that be the one to would that be like the guinea pigs of that final HOH competition where like nobody remembered Morgan? It's so interesting. And overall, this season, I think, does a really fun job of acknowledging its past, you know, between bringing back all these previous house guests and, you know, all the different competitions that happen in here. Again, the part two of the final HOH is usually about stuff that happened within the season itself, but this is completely devoid of that. This is, you need to know the first six winners, and all of this, everyone in this cast did, either because they were a fan or because they were told them in the house before the competition itself. But the production aspect behind this is really cool. I'm trying to think, was this the first time they really went all out with part two of the HOH? Because now we sort of have these big things. I remember like the roller coaster one from Big Brother 18. Big Brother 10 had the boxing match between Memphis and Jerry, essentially, which sounds so comical on paper. But this might be the first time that, I mean, they suspended a freaking car from the ceiling.
Yeah.
That's purely ridiculous by Shapiro era Big Brother standards.
I think if I'm remembering correctly, I think the BBC, it might have been a different competition. This might have been a random veto or so. Actually, this probably was a different competition, but I feel like, oh no, it's Big Brother 8 is what I'm thinking of, where they did part two was in a swimming pool and they just had that as like the set. And that might have been similar for BBC.
Oh, right. Yeah, they had to like dive down and grab the tokens. And then and BB8 part one also had that like very insane. I miss the first part of these ones where it was hang on to your key, but it was hang on to your key in a bunch of different circumstances. Like this one was on the volcano. Big Brother 8 was the one that was done in the rain.
That's the best one ever. Big Brother 8 part one is the best part of any final HOH competition, I think, probably ever.
It's just such fantastic production quality. But yeah, the only other thing I can think of is like, for some reason, I remember, again, this aforementioned Diamond Power of Veto, the Big Brother 4, Final 4 Veto, was like, they basically built like the aggro crag, and they like had to build the steps to make it to the top, I think, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yes. Yeah, you're spot on. And Dom, I will literally PayPal you $50 right now if you can tell me what the aggro crag is.
As expected, I have zero clue what that is, so okay. your money is safe for now. But I will highlight as well that it's one of the reasons I was so sad not to see Will make it to that final round was that just firstly seeing him having to actually try in a competition, knowing that it's $500,000 on the line. But also, if he'd got to part two, because he's not winning part one either. Just seeing your own name in part of that chain and knowing if you complete this part of the competition in the fastest time, you're going to do it again. Like, that is absolutely surreal.
And it's also especially just because that competition, you would think Janelle would be a huge favorite against a random person in a random part two of a final HOH, but it really did seem like that was almost entirely just upper body strength, and I would give the slight edge to Will Kirby against Janelle in upper body strength, very slight, and maybe it may even go the other way, but we saw Boogie really, like, shellack Janelle at this challenge.
Yeah, which again is surprising considering that I believe Janelle still holds the record for most challenges won in a season with 9. And I don't know, it might be a toss between Will and Janelle though, because it does deal with mirrors and both of them are very much obsessed with the mirror.
Yeah. So Boogie is going to win part two, and as well as the car, which we found out in that View interview he ended up giving to his mom. What was a Pontiac of some sort?
It was a GM Pontiac Solstice convertible.
Okay. Good. As we all know, the most popular car on the roads these days, you can't drive anywhere without seeing several of them. But so part three, as we've mentioned, is probably not really going to matter for Janelle, as she has to just sit and watch Boogie end up getting the questions right over Erica. And he is, of course, going to end up cutting her here. Mike, I guess let's get your just overall takes on Janelle 2.0 before we dive in on Janelle overall, because this is, of course, not going to be her final appearance on Big Brother.
So when it comes to breaking down gameplay, I feel like some of the best reality TV players are good at anticipatory strategy and reactionary strategy, in that they know how to plan two steps ahead, but if something goes wrong or a last-minute twist gets thrown in, they're able to react accordingly. I feel like Janelle is an okay reactionary player. You know, when she's given spur of the moment to make nominations, she does them and she does them all right, but I feel like in terms of anticipatory moves, Janelle is not very good at this. And I think even she knows she's not very good at this. You know, between, you know, putting up Diane and, you know, putting up Marcellus, the moves that she's making and the things that she decided to do specifically in this season really just does not show how far she was thinking ahead towards the end of the game. And part of that might be because of her competition status. Again, she won 9. It's super interesting looking at the way things shook out. Due to her competition wins and the Season 6 Alliance winning the first 4 HOHs, the only time she really was not safe was the week or the time that Chicken George won HOH. And even then, he didn't want to put her up because he respected her as a competitor. Every other time, either her ally had won HOH or she won veto or HOH herself, which is amazing. And I think it shows that, you know, she was such a big target coming in. Not only was she a big not a big competition beast. I think she won like 5 or something, 4 or 5 in Big Brother 6. But from a fan perspective, she was the most universally loved contestant in Big Brother history. Yeah, and go ahead.
I was just going to say, she might have been the biggest target, if you had asked everyone to like rank their list of consensus targets entering every week, she might have been like the number one person on the group consensus list every single week and was never a final nominee.
Yeah, which again, like I have to get, even though she does not, I do not think she has good decision-making skills, I'm going to give her all the credit in the world for doing that, because at the end of the day, the goal of the game is to keep yourself safe. And she ended up doing that. Now, does that necessarily translate into good strategy? No, not whatsoever. And did she definitely get into personal tiffs with people? Definitely, you know, you guys have talked about it a lot, the recurring segment of these are people negatively talking about Janelle and Julie sort of calls them out for it. But I still think if she makes it to the end of the game, again, because of the makeup of this jury, they're going to give it to her. Even if they don't like her on a personal level, they respect how she was able to really overcome how much of the odds were against her. And that's what inherently makes her such a popular figure as well, is because maybe her decision making puts her in this inevitable underdog position, she's able to somehow work against it and make it far enough that people are able to root for her. And again, I cannot speak enough for people who were not watching this at the time. I mean, when the America's Favorite Juror Prize was announced, it was very akin to, okay, we're going to give Rupert the $1 million. We're going to give Janelle just a free $25,000. Right. Everyone, including the jurors, knew that she was going to win this. And I think that the popularity of Janelle in Big Brother 6 or 7 goes completely unmatched. You know, maybe if social media was more of a thing, maybe there'd be more negativity towards Janelle out there. But in terms of like to dislike ratio, nothing beats Janelle, in my opinion, in terms of popularity.
Yeah, I was going to say, she's almost like a decade ahead of her time as far as this like Big Brother mega stan culture that seems to have developed, I would say, on like now with the explosion of Twitter and other social media platforms. It really seems like Janelle was like the patient zero and one of the only people for a while that was really just split the house in half. Everything is for or against Janelle. Live or die with the competitions. Yas queen slay.
Yeah, and you know, again, that does not make for the best strategy because, again, Janelle likes to draw lines in the sand and she doesn't necessarily have the best like social game. She can sometimes, not as bad as Howie, but she can definitely say some mean things and some vapid things to people sometimes. But again, when she's doing it against the people that you don't like, people throw their support behind her. And it's very akin to like Rupert, who again was not a very good Survivor player, but between his story and, you know, just the general character of him, became an overwhelming favorite.
I think Janelle to this day is still going to go down as like she may for my money be the most iconic Big Brother player now that she's played for a third time. And frankly, you know, you've characterized this earlier as like the season of Will, which I don't think is inaccurate, but I do think it would be, for my money, the season of Will and Janelle. I think they were both clearly the main characters over the course of this year.
Yeah, which again, it makes it a little disappointing. I know that All Stars for a while left a sour taste in my mouth, and it was another reason why I didn't want to re-explore the season, was because it was like, you have a final four of these two such big presences in the game, and then these two like, okay, why are they here? And again, as going in, I now disagree with a younger version of myself. And then the two that you're asking, why are they here, end up making it to the end. And so you sort of have this really bitter taste in your mouth. Now that I've sort of grown more objective and can appreciate the game from a different perspective, I could definitely appreciate what Boogie and even Erica were bringing. But at the time, much like, again, Nick Comas and a lot of America, people were very, very miffed that Janelle once again finished in third place. The robbed G. Oddis moniker continues for her.
Yeah. How, if at all, did Janelle change for you during BB14?
Janelle's life had changed, right? She had become a mother. It's clear she had like settled down. You know, she clearly was not going to be the bubbly, flirty type, which I think was another reason. I don't want to go too much into the psychoanalysis of why Janelle was so popular, but I wonder if part of it was she almost defied type. Like, here was this person who started BB6 as a VIP cocktail waitress, you know, as people were sort of calling her like the blonde bombshell. But she ends up like kicking ass in competitions and taking the house by storm. And I think it's that sort of like unconventional type, especially from a female character, that I think a lot of people really threw their weight behind. When it came to Big Brother 14, I mean, it's a little tough, right? Because I feel like as soon as the coaches entered the game, then Boogie was like, all right, time to turn on to Janelle. And it's weird watching that as well, considering that, you know, when Mike twirls Janelle around the house and lets her out of the house, you know, you would argue that if I asked you, okay, Janelle is going to like basically swear off one member of this final two for the rest of their life, who's it going to be? Your guess would be Erica, considering how bitter she is against her when she enters the jury house. But no, going into Big Brother 14, her and Mike apparently had like a huge falling out outside of the show, to the point of when they come in together, that's immediately who Boogie is going to go after. And it's a little bit like, I would almost compare it to like what happened with Gary in Big Brother Canada 5, where like, looking back, I wish, as much as I enjoy Big Brother 14, I wish we could have seen Janelle just do more. It kind of, I wouldn't say she was a shell of her former self, but it kind of sucked that as soon as the coaches came back in, you know, Will went out and then her. And then you're sort of like, oh, I really wanted to see Janelle back. It's been 7 years, or it's been 6 years, but now she's just going to go out pre-jury, which is just, it's different for Janelle, considering that we've seen her make the penultimate episode twice.
Yeah, it's weird, though, because you're right. It is totally a different experience with Janelle, and I guess you know, part of her story in BB14 is like, oh, she's a mom now and ostensibly has grown a lot as a person. I would say, though, for me, not a whole lot changes for me with Janelle based on BB14. It was basically what I would have expected out of Janelle 6 years later.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember too much. I think your previous guest, Ian, would be more of a would be a better source of that. I do remember like the coaches' meetings. I don't remember her actually being that adept at things. So, yeah, again, I think it just goes back to the idea that Janelle is a rootable character. And a pretty good competition beast, but strategically, she definitely does not match up to some of the stuff that even, especially comparing to like Boogie and Will, and even Brittany, who I felt like stepped up her game a bit in Big Brother 14. From a purely game perspective, she was definitely ranked last on those coaches.
Totally. Dom, where are you on Janelle these days?
I haven't really changed my view about her at all. I maintain the same line that I've given every single time you ask me about Janelle. I think she is an entertaining character, if not a sympathetic one for me, and I don't think she's a good player. I mean, she's amazing at the competitions. She is almost unparalleled at the competitions. But to me, if that only gets you so far, and you have to supplement that with the soft skills that you need to succeed in the game. And you've seen the rounds that Janelle isn't in power. She is actively pushing people away that she needs to get on her side. And for as much as you can say that all of those people in that montage that I played of coming out of the house and being upbraided by Julie for what they said about her, like, they went over the line, but it's no accident, I think, that all of them, so many people came out of the house hating her.
Yeah, I think, that definitely checks out as far as the kind of takeaways most people come away with for Janelle. And it doesn't seem like, as mentioned, like anything has even changed these days. I still would qualify her as one of the most popular and simultaneously unpopular people in Big Brother history, where everyone seems to feel pretty strongly about Janelle.
And in that same vein, I know Mike mentioned that she was this massive jury threat, but I don't know to what extent that's true, because obviously I think she beats Chicken George, she beats Erica. I still believe that she loses to either member of Chill Town. Like, obviously Will demolishes her, but I think Boogie gets pretty much the same spread of votes, where like Janelle gets Harry and Marcellus and Boogie gets the rest. And then going back further, I think Danielle probably wins, although it's hard to see how the two of them end up there together. So maybe same thing with James, although I think he was a lot less popular. And I would like to believe that Janelle beats Harry. If Harry somehow wins Big Brother, I don't even know what I would do. But
yeah, well, to that point, I will say that maybe I'm making a broad assumption, because, again, I think it comes down to being able to tell your story. And I vocalize Janelle. Janelle has a great story of, hey, I came in as probably the number one person to get rid of. You could not get rid of me. I was able to protect myself. I had the ultimate underdog story. If she's not able to vocalize that properly, I could see her not getting a few votes. I don't know. I think she might be able to squeak it out against Boogie. I think she loses to Will. I think if we're doing power rankings of that final four in terms of win equity, Will is far and above the number one. But I feel like Janelle might squeak out for Boogie, just because, you know, Boogie was credited with this "you rode Will's coattails," but he was able to win because they respected the other person less. You know, I wonder if he's up against Janelle, especially if he takes Janelle to the end. I could imagine he might get a little lambasted over that, and as a result, people more so throw their votes to Janelle just out of respect.
Yeah, well, let's get into, just quickly, I think what we'll do is we'll spend more time on the jury questioning and the final two interviews and so forth. Dom and I will, in our following podcast, just in the interest of not wasting Mike's entire day here with us, because we still have a couple other things we want to get to. But I did think one of the highlights for me that I definitely want to touch on from that jury deliberation was Howie saying, Erica deserves to win this game more than anyone in the history of this game, and then does not go on to even vote for Erica to win the game.
Yeah, you could tell even he didn't believe that. That's such a weird statement, because, I mean, I think he was trying to make the statement of what I was encouraging Erica to say early on in this podcast of, like, you're all sitting here, I'm sitting there, clearly I must have done something right. But because it's Howie and because it's not delivered in a great way, I love that even Janelle was against it. You think that Janelle and Howie would be lock and step, considering that they were so close together in Big Brother 6, but even she's like, no, Howie, that's not, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
Howie doesn't even believe that 5 seconds later. I think Harry resembles certain public figures in that he has zero impulse control. He just says and does whatever his synapses misfiring happens to result in his brain. There's no sense of agency at all. It's just Harry being Harry.
Yeah. Well, Mike, before we get into just the final result, though, I do think it is fun anytime watching one of these older seasons back, having that old jury format versus the new jury format, which I think is just a byproduct of them wanting to keep three people in the house until the finale. What is your just general take on that format shift?
I mean, I love it. As someone who came in, you know, obviously brought that in from Survivor, I really enjoyed, you know, the fact that they're able to it seems a little bit more casual. It seems a lot less like here are nine people up on stage, like reading questions from cue cards, especially like the third place person comes immediately out and is probably going to get like handed a card of like, okay, this is the question that you need to ask the final two. Though it is interesting that they sort of collaborate on a list of questions. I wonder how much that decision-making process takes place as to whether there are like a couple of voices in the room who decide to ask questions and a couple other people that are like, it's okay, I'm going home soon. Like, I don't care what to necessarily ask of them. But this is a really interesting particular set of jury questioning, just because I feel like as much chagrin as I've sort of thrown towards Mike Buggy over the course of this podcast, I feel like he kills this jury questioning. One question in particular from Danielle, who says, you know, Buggy, you came into this house and you said you wanted to be my Jason, and Jason would have never done that to me. How do you justify it? And Buggy responds by saying, look, I'll make you a deal, Danielle.
We can play the clip. We can go to the tape, because I think it's worth capturing that moment properly, because we'll talk about this certainly by ourselves in the next episode. But given that you brought it up, I think there's no harm in giving a preview of that.
Jason would have never done what you did to me, so justify yourself.
I'll make you a deal, Danielle. You give me your vote to win the money, and if I go home to my TiVo and I don't see more than one Jason, I'll give you half. I think James was your Jason. I think Erica was your Jason. I think I was your Jason. You were a very dangerous player that had to go. And I just won't apologize for it.
So, I mean, it's masterful, in my opinion, especially because it just came off of Danielle asking Erica, you know, was it your decision or was it Chilltown's decision to get rid of me? Which admittedly is a bit of a catch-22. You know, if Erica says it was her decision, Danielle feels betrayed. If she says it was Chilltown's decision, they feel like Chilltown played her. But Mike does almost in like a Todd John Robert type of thing in Survivor China, was essentially saying like, listen, yeah, I, you know, duped you because you were duping me, because you had multiple alliances with other people in the house. We were not your ride or die. So like, listen, I basically saying I played you before you could play me. And you could see that smile on Danielle's face. That's exactly the answer that she wanted. I think that's just very indicative. And even going to those final statements, you know, Erica goes into, as I mentioned before, this entire thing about she just focuses on her move of getting rid of Will, which, again, when you're describing an entire game of 80 something days, that's not necessarily the thing you want to do. But Boogie goes down the line and is like, you all did something. You gave me something that informed my game. Marcellus, you motivated me. Howie, you entertained me. Janelle and James, you challenged me. Danielle and George, you inspired me. And Will, you were all of the above. I think he did a really great job of, whereas Erica did not acknowledge any of the jury members in her final speech, Boogie acknowledged all of them. And you have to imagine, when that's the very last thing you say to the jurors, that leaves a fantastic impression that would turn basically anyone who was on the fence, with the exception of Marcellus, over to Boogie's side.
Might I add quickly for the record,
Wait. I know what you're saying. Okay. I want to say it myself. Okay, so contrarian takes coming in here. So I agree that that answer to Danielle was fantastic, and I want to return to that not only in a future podcast, but also in a second. I do question, though, I think that approach by Boogie works because he was already the heavy favorite coming in. I think he knew the moment that he won that part three, or even the moment that Janelle lost part two, that he was going to win the game. And for as much as he does give some great answers, that approach of just going down the line and spending 5 seconds with every juror, I think that comes off as so disingenuous. And the best example of this would be Dan Giesling shamelessly stealing this in BB14, where it you can tell by the looks on their faces, it is not going down well at all. It goes down like a lead balloon. And to them, it confirms everything that they already thought about Dan, that he was just shamelessly pandering to them, that nothing they had with him was real, and that he's just trying to exploit their emotions in the most transparent way possible to get a jury vote. And I don't think this got anyone off the fence on Boogie's behalf, and I think there's a chance that someone who was that disgusted with Boogie, like that could have tipped them over the edge, maybe.
Well, I mean, I think that there's never like a set of rules for like how you should play this, right? It's always going to depend on who's on the jury. And I think, again, it was because it was not only people who really want to honor the game, but also people who all knew each other beforehand, that I think Boogie could get that personal. Because I do agree. Yeah. The way it comes off, the reason it comes out hokey for Dan is because Dan didn't know these people. Dan just met these people. And so it's hokey to be like, you've inspired me, you know? And so I think it not only depends on delivery, it depends on the context of the people that you're talking to. So, yeah, I would not say anyone walking into a season of Big Brother should use this technique whatsoever. But I think it just happened to be the right set of circumstances that it did work for Boogie, especially in comparison to Erica, who is like, yeah, I mean, yeah, you're the jury, fine. But remember when I took out Dr. Will? How great was that?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think one thing we do talk about, I think more often on Survivor than on Big Brother, just in the context of like how much Final Tribal Council matters, is our conclusion is usually very little, and the person who goes in feeling very good about their chances of winning is often going to have a huge upper hand, not just in the form of already having the jury's support, but in terms of delivering their message. I think they're going to have a lot easier time coming across just sounding better and feeling more confident than the person who feels like they're fighting an uphill battle.
I was also going to say, on the topic of Erica, I think she was in a very tough spot. I don't think she could have won anyone over to her side. But I don't hate that focus on the Will move, because firstly, as you said, what else is she really going to point to? She was a floater, which I think is the right way to play, but also means that you don't have that resume that you need at the end. And then the one big move that she made before that was evading Danielle, which you could argue sabotaged any chance she had of winning the game. So from her perspective, if you were launched into Erica's body going to that final two, there's really nothing else that you could argue. And I also think it's not that bad of an argument, because if the case is Will evaded every single one of you and then I evaded him, then I evaded the puppet master. Like, that's for all the Boogie wants to say that he was involved in, that's the one move, the biggest move of the season, that he can't claim any credit for. So I think it was an impossible situation. She was never going to win, and although some of her other answers were a little lacking, I think she handled that approach about as best as she could. The other thing I wanted to bring up was Danielle's question about Jason, because Jason gets, more so than maybe any other contestant in the history of the show, he gets so much less credit and discussion than he should, given the game that he played in Big Brother 3. But I've wondered, having rewatched that season recently, and then comparing that with the starkest contrast possible that you have in modern-day Big Brother, would he just get eaten alive nowadays? Would he just be chewed up and spat out? Because he seemed like he had his game playing side. He was willing to make some of these cutthroat moves occasionally, but you also saw him like tear up over having to nominate Roddy or really want to maintain his commitment to Danielle, which was easy for him because he wins 10-0 if that happens. But if it didn't, if he had to go after someone who he was really close to, I don't know that he pulls the trigger. And I worry that you put him in like Big Brother 19, he leaves not only earlier than he should, he maybe leaves scarred for life, just having been exposed to these just truly terrible, awful people.
That's the thing, is I've always wondered, when it comes to Jason, I agree that he's a tremendously likable and charismatic guy who showed a great deal of capacity for the game. But he also had Danielle Reyes there in his ear to go through like the strategic reasons of why to do certain things. And also, I think, making him comfortable with doing those things in an environment where I don't know that without someone of that caliber, frankly, making him feel like those are smart things to do and things that are okay to do, that he would be willing to do that. I think he could be totally vulnerable to getting into the Big Brother house, being spooked by all the weirdos that he was surrounded by, and uncomfortable about the game that he was playing under different circumstances.
could you then make like the JT and Steven argument that a lot of people have of like, they play much better together than separately? Could you say the same thing with Danielle and Jason too?
I think Danielle would go into any Big Brother house very ready and willing to play great Big Brother, whereas I just don't know if that's true of Jason. And I'm not trying to say it's conclusively untrue of Jason. I just have a hard time differentiating him. Like I have a hard time conceptualizing how he would even be anywhere near that good if it was not alongside someone like Danielle Reyes, frankly.
Well, I think that, yeah, I think Jason is very emotionally connected to the people in the house, which I think actually was to his benefit. You know, that's why him and Danielle worked like such a great pair in Big Brother 3, is because she was really, you know, planning out the moves, but Jason was sort of the good cop, bad cop. It was him saying like, you know, I make these connections with you, like I'm genuinely sorry that Marcellus, but I have to evict you, those types of things. And that's what really endeared him, and that's why he would ultimately win the game. But yeah, I think nowadays, when the game has evolved so much that really the strategy has really at the forefront over some of the personal dynamics in some cases, I think, yeah, he would definitely struggle with that, especially once they throw twists his way as well, considering that their biggest twist was the golden power veto, or no, the silver power veto that turned into the golden power veto for the final five. Yeah, who, God only knows how he'd be able to handle like the tree of temptation.
Right, right. Dom, do you have any fire Jason takes now that you've been rewatching?
I love the guy, and he's in the same mold as Devin for me, where like it makes me angry that there's someone that perfect. Like that shouldn't be possible.
Devin from Big Brother, I assume you mean Devin from BB16.
Yes, of course. The daughter.
Yes, naturally. But I do worry about, like, so Danielle, I think, is rightly idolized. I came away from this rewatch just loving Danielle even more, but I still get hung up on the fact that she wanted to lose to Jason. Her whole game was to lose to Jason. And if that happened, does Jason get blowback in the same way that Lisa sometimes does? But, oh, he wasn't a worthy winner. He didn't do anything. He didn't deserve to win, with that very modern-day mindset. Or do people acknowledge Jason for the amazing game that he truly played, where, like, no one even wanted to come after him at any point, and somehow he was able to miss the most cutthroat player on the season into wanting to give him that kind of devotion. I don't know.
Yeah, Jason, I think, is certainly someone to put it back in the terms that you brought this up in, I think has been unfortunately almost lost to history and should be remembered more fondly and with more regard as a player, I think, than he generally is.
I think you guys are just trying to incept your patrons into picking Big Brother 3 as the next season you watch with all this Jason Guy talk.
If they want to do that, I'm not going to complain. If only because I've already put the effort in. But it genuinely is a good season and one that's worth talking about in some capacity. And I'm sure we will, even if it doesn't get picked for that honor.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's before we get into just the final vote reveal, we have this almost like mini reunion that they always bring out the people that were the early boots to come back out, who've gotten to see the whole season play out. I can't recall another one, and this is hard to say about Big Brother, a show that it seems like has just been on a total downward slope as far as trashiness is concerned overall. But I feel like this is the most mean-spirited series of packages I've ever seen rolled out back-to-back-to-back on Big Brother, where first it's James getting railroaded about by both Julie and Kacer about all the terrible things he said about Janelle and how he was never really in on season 6. There's a bad Chilltown phone call parody that sets up them clowning on everyone. And by the way, there's no such thing as a good Chilltown parody of the phone call. It has never once worked in any capacity, particularly on BB14. And then the icing on the cake for me was Allison Irwin, who's been off the show for 2.5 months, congratulates Erica on making it so far and essentially getting played all summer long by saying, "I hope you use that money to buy yourself some dignity." Some shots very fired here, Mike.
Yeah, pot, kettle, and so on and so forth.
And that's another interesting thing as well, as they talked about in the jury questioning. Like, I think it was James who said, "Will you disparage Allison for the way she was playing Big Brother 4, saying she like flirted and floated her way to the end? How do you feel that you played the exact same game?" Which I do not think she played the exact same game, but I guess we're talking in like that broad of terms. I guess maybe, I don't know. I feel like Allison was very deliberate in that flirting.
It's completely different. Like, the only similarity is they both had a showmance at some point on the season. Like, that's
yeah,
the
exactly.
only he is the only common thread. The whole point of Allison's game was she had a showmance with everything that moved, whereas Erica was so fixated on the one person that blinded her to what was going on in the game. There's no similarity here, but it's... Yeah, so...
And it wasn't even a strategy on her part. Like, again, she was coming from a very fragile point in her life, and I think she just happened to sort of, like... She didn't mean to, and it was much more genuine than anything that Allison did. But yeah, it was weird that Julie said, okay, Allison, you be the one to break this news to Erica. Again, it goes back to what I said before, where Erica just gets ravaged. You know, Howie's going to say during the jury questioning as well, like, Erica, I liked you, but I heard you didn't like me. You know, I still like you, but I don't think America's going to like you anymore. God, how fucking traumatizing is that to hear? Of like, hey, you spent 3 months in this house, you're gonna come out to the, and everyone's gonna hate you now, coming from someone who everyone thought was still America's favorite at the time, is like an absolutely horrifying thing to hear. And then to come into this as well, it's just there's a lot of, again, I'm surprised because Survivor All-Stars is the one that's usually associated with all the negativity, but there's so much negativity that comes out between this cast. Though it's another reason why I wanted Dr. Will in the finals, because if it cut to Allison like talking to someone, Will would have no idea who that was. He'd think that they just went to the audience that they knew during a Survivor finale.
Do you think that Erica and Danielle's relationship, as complicated and then as traumatizing as it was at the end, do you think that was a product of, you said that Erica was coming in a state of emotional fragility, and Danielle in her exit interview, she said essentially the same thing, that she was playing a lot more emotional and the game itself was a lot tougher and more personal than it was the first time round. And it seemed like that was a recipe for disaster for the two of them eventually, when one of them was going to have to turn on the other. And when they did, that was going to be not just a tough thing to process in the game, but a legitimately crushing thing in real life as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because, again, that might be one of the only examples of those genuine emotions really affecting this season. Because, again, nearly everyone sort of has this good game mentality. It's much more Survivor Cambodia than it is Survivor All-Stars in that regard, or Survivor Millennials versus Gen X. But that might be the exception. I think it just might be, you know, the way they were feeling by the end of it. And maybe, you know, even though Danielle had a million Jasons, this is the time that she really felt like if Jason had betrayed her, if for some reason he voted her out at Final Three and brought Lisa to the end, maybe we've gotten a very similar reaction to Danielle, because this really is like the first time that one of her partners in the game, one of her ride to dies, directly betrayed her, which again is something that she had never prepared for before. And again, this brings out this different part of her personality. And I really do feel like Erica was looking for connections, and it seemed like not a lot of people liked Erica necessarily. So when you have people like Mike and Danielle who sort of offer you a hand and say like, hey, let's buddy up, she's going to tend to form really close bonds with them because they're the ones that are offering to talk with her, unlike, as it seems, the rest of the house.
Yeah, it really was, as you mentioned, it was interesting seeing Howie speculate as he was casting his vote just about, like, I don't think America likes you, which I'm not sure what even was making him feel that way, considering how long he'd been out of the game at that point. It was also fun, though, as he was doing that, of course, plugging HowieGordon.com. Go chat with him there. I'm sure it's still available. If Dom, if we still want to go and purchase that, I think that might be something we should do. We need to get MarcellusReynolds.com. He had a hat that said that. I don't know if that's going to be still up. At the previously mentioned Dolphin Crash, I think might be available from Zach on BB. I think we could really scoop up a lot of BB domain names here. But guys, by a vote of 6-1, Mike Boogie is going to be our Big Brother All-Star champion after the votes come in. Mike Bloom, what is your just general reaction to Boogie being the winner of Big Brother All-Stars in the game that he played?
I mean, I have to be happy that another Mike B took the victory. I don't think we're going to get that for a long, long time. We got Mike H, but no other Mike Bs. So at the time, I was okay with it just because I'm like, okay, at least a member of Chilltown won. If it wasn't Will, it wasn't Janelle, at least this was the lesser of two evils in a way. And I feel like the audience generally felt the same way, but I think some of Mike's behavior, especially in the later portion of the game, made him one of the least likable winners coming out of the house. Granted, nowadays, with the advent of social media, that sort of becomes your tradition in the Big Brother season. But back at that time, you know, even though someone like Maggie was part of the most reviled alliance in Big Brother history, some people like respected her game at least. I think a lot of people have come around on Mike Boogie. I think it's just because of the Chilltown legacy and just because of looking back the game that he was able to play, even though I will, again, dock him some points for putting himself in a situation where he'd prefer to go to Will with the end and lose, even though he would have shared the money outside of the game. You know, he did some really good things, and I think that Chilltown wouldn't have worked without him. He had other things to do. You know, they were able to disseminate the relationship a little bit. He obviously had the thing going on with Erica. He won the coup d'etat, which was pivotal in getting Will off that block and possibly going home during Chicken George's HOH. He had the competition wins, which, as we know, Will definitely did it. So I think you can definitely give some credit to Mike Boogie here. And it's been so interesting to see the community come around on him as well, because, again, I can't say enough how much people did not like Mike once Big Brother All-Stars ended, and how much they said it became a rule in reality TV All-Star shows that the least deserving person, or when you look at the cast on the outset and you say, oh, why is this person there? That person's going to end up winning the season at the end of the day.
Well, was that based, that kind of distaste for Boogie by the general viewing public, was that truly based on like them thinking he didn't play a good game, or was that more because of just the comments he was making and this general treatment of Erica?
It was the general treatment, plus it was a lot of people. I even, you know, when I watched some Big Brother 7 clips, I would look at the YouTube comments and people were still saying Will should have won, Janelle should have won. So I think it's general like backlash to that as well, which again is not, it's much like you were talking about before, Dom, with Lisa Donahue, about how it's not his fault that, you know, he voted out Janelle when he should have and won the game as a result. But I think a lot of reasons why people ranked him so low initially starting off is because they felt like, well, there were other people that I wanted to win more, so therefore I'm going to rank him near the bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like the most basic take you can have about BB7 is that Will should have won, and then one step up is Janelle should have won. And then finally, like, the galactic brain take is that Erica should have won. And then the idea that Boogie is actually a good winner for the season seems to be somewhere in the middle there, which for most seasons is fairly well accepted that even if you don't like the winner, then you can't really complain about their win, although maybe in the light of BB19, that's not so true anymore. Will and Janelle are like the two actual winners in the minds of the audience, and then Boogie is like, oh, he was the one who actually won, right? He seems to be just there as a plus one.
Yeah, though, I mean, it's one of the reasons why I was really happy with this outcome is something that Danielle vocalizes. You know, I feel like if we're telling the story of the season, and if we can't get Will or Janelle, a Chilltown member has to win this season, just because they were, even from the initial stages, they were so pivotal in the narrative of each and every week of this season. There was not a week where Chilltown was not doing something, which you couldn't necessarily say about somebody like Erica. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing, but if you're telling this story of Big Brother 7 overall, it needs to go to the alliance that had a hand in everything, that had all of that airtime, because it was such an active participant both behind the scenes and in front of the scenery. So from that perspective alone, I feel like Boogie's win makes sense, too.
Yeah, and the good news is they brought every single person in the house into Chilltown. So no matter what, a Chilltown member is going to win the season. We're all good. It just happened to be Mike Boogie. Mike Bloom, again, where is Big Brother 7 for you just in the pantheon of reality TV?
Oh, it's a good question, because ordinarily, I am – if you give me a choice, and this is a bit of a hot take on my part, but if you give me a choice of, like, watching a good season with all new players and a good season with returning players, I'm going to take the good season with new players, just because the thing that always draws me back into reality television is this idea of people from different walks of life meeting each other, interacting with each other, you know, playing with each other, going against each other, and seeing what exactly shakes down. So, I mean, I usually go between BB 6, 7, and 10 are my three favorite seasons, and I consistently juggle between which one is my favorite, but this season is just fantastic.
Is it apples to oranges to ask how it stacks up, like, compared to the best Survivor seasons?
A little bit, yeah, just because, you know, I watch Big Brother for different reasons than I watch a show like Survivor, and especially because, you know, Big Brother is a show that I am not inherently as I still adore it and I love it, and that's why I'm grateful that I'm covering it. But I feel like Big Brother is so much more strategy oriented, which is not necessarily what I watch these shows for. So I am more inherently invested in a show like Survivor that it's really tough to compare some of the seasons, just because I have such love for a lot of these Survivor seasons. And I have a lot of love for these Big Brother seasons as well, but I almost watch the show for separate reasons that it's really tough to compare. But if I must, I do feel like Big Brother 7 is one of my favorite reality TV seasons, just because I feel like something happens every single week. There really isn't a quote-unquote dud week. Maybe week two, just because, like, Nokomis and Diane, there's nothing that really gets sparked there, even behind the scenes with the Chilltown versus season 6 stuff. But I didn't remember, like, any of the pre-jury stuff before going into this rewatch in preparation for this podcast. Like, I'd forgotten about the Jace blow-up. I'd forgotten how much the Diane backdoor really fractured season 6. I'd forgotten about I remember the graveyard veto, but I'd forgotten about throwing it to Janelle specifically and then throwing the veto to Danielle the next week. It just – there's so many events that happen. And I feel like a lot of Big Brother seasons, you can say, like, wow, the pre-jury was really crazy and very eventful. The post-jury, it's fine, not so much. Or seasons sometimes flip-flop that mentality. Big Brother 7 is one of the only seasons I can recall where there was an eventful pre-jury and an eventful jury phase as well. And for that reason alone, I immensely enjoyed getting to watch this and see, you know, how much passion everyone had for the game, how much passion they had for the show in terms of delivering funny moments and genuine character moments in the diary room. It just made me so, so happy to rewatch this season, even though I had to rewatch Will get crushed at the final four once more and relive that, you know, that traumatizing incident. I really enjoyed getting to rewatch it.
Yeah, Big Brother 7 for me, it's got to be very near the top of the list of seasons I have rewatched the most times out of any season of CBS or just American reality. Like, this is at least the sixth or seventh time that I've watched through this full season. And Mike, by the way, we love you so much for watching the whole thing back, just to come on and talk to us. That's such a solid effort on your part. But I agree with you that I think every single episode is really, really watchable. And I know I talked earlier about how, for me, for whatever reason, Big Brother has a tendency to just be that way, more so than potentially for other people. But I think that's virtually unheard of, even for the 14, 15-ish episode Survivor seasons. It's very tough, I would say, for every single episode to be really riveting. And I would say it's borderline impossible for a Big Brother season to go an entire summer being that way. But for Big Brother 7, I really enjoy every single time that I watch each one of these episodes. I'm loving it. And for me, I think it is, setting aside the Genius, which is a South Korean show, I think Big Brother 7 is, for at least for me, still my number one American reality TV season ever. I will never get tired, at least not yet or anytime soon, of Big Brother 7. Mike, any other takes that you wanted to get to that we didn't bring up or give you an opportunity for?
Oh my goodness. I'm trying to think. It's interesting, again, comparing, you know, modern Big Brother to this relic of the Arnold Shapiro era, you know, having the final HOH part. No, we no longer have the big scales of justice, even though that only came into effect at Big Brother 15. It's much sooner than I initially thought, where it's just them sitting in the living room with the two little A or B wheels. It's so interesting remembering when there was not a live studio audience, that there was only an audience that came out for the finale, and they were holding up signs and they were like trying to high five and touch the jury members as they walked by on the catwalk. You know, it really is a relic of a time gone by. I still think there is inherent DNA, not project DNA, but DNA encoded within Big Brother as a franchise. That's what's kept it going for so many years. But, you know, this will be the last one that Arnold Shapiro works on. And it's been so interesting to sort of chart, like, okay, under a different executive producer, how did this show look? And the cast in general, again, with typical all-star seasons, you might point to one or two people in the cast and be like, this person's here. And arguably you could say that about like Boogie and Erica, but in terms of like actually bringing material to the show, I feel like nearly everyone delivered something. Again, the lone exception might be someone like Nokomis, but even your pre-jury boots, your Allison, your Jace, your Diane, your Kacer, your Marcellus, they all brought something to the season from an entertainment perspective, which again is unheard of in reality television, usually on a season old or new, you usually get one or two people that are kind of duds or who don't get that much camera time. But everyone was involved in some sort of way, shape, or form, and it just speaks to how fantastic this cast is overall.
It seems like it's almost deliberately avoided these days, having everyone in the cast be involved.
I mean, I guess it depends on, like, the stories that they're telling and the strategy that some people enlist to say, like, go completely under the radar and not get involved at all. And then once you get to the finals, completely throw yourself on your sword for the person you've been making out with the entire summer. Not going to name names or anything, but everyone was sort of bloodthirsty there. Everyone was actively trying to play the game to the best of their ability, which leads to overall more entertaining seasons. Whether it's good strategy or bad strategy overall, I feel like at least when the effort is put in, that makes for the most entertaining television, from my perspective.
Absolutely. Mike Bloom, thank you so much for coming on with us and giving us so much time. Fantastic stuff as always. You can be finding Mike again on Twitter at a Mike Bloom type. Finding all of his podcasts over at RHAP and Survivor Historians and Post Show Recaps. All of his coverage at Parade.com. Mike, anything else that you would like to plug or say at this time?
The only other thing is, you know, at the time we're recording this, which again, Colin dated so nicely at the very beginning of this 2.5 hour podcast, Celebrity Big Brother is around the corner. I do not know yet what my coverage will be, but I'll be hopefully covering that in some sort of way, shape, or form. And then, you know, I'm working on Amazing Race right now and Top Chef. And once Survivor 36 comes back, I'll be hopping in and covering that as well. So again, it's been about 6 months at this point. It's still completely surreal to me that as a lifelong fan of all of these CBS shows, I get to talk with these contestants and cover the show in any way, shape, or form. I don't know if it's changed my perspective on these shows, but it's given me so much more appreciation for the people that go on and play them. And, you know, this cast especially is no different. Thank you guys for giving me an excuse to go back and watch this season. Again, it's something I don't ordinarily do, but I think you guys have done a fantastic retrospective on this series, especially looking at it from the lens of 10 years later and seeing how the moves look, knowing how everything plays out. I'm so excited to see where you guys go next. Maybe it's just bias for me considering that I am part of a podcast that takes a look at old Survivor seasons from a modern lens. But I think you guys do a fantastic job, and I can't wait for the BB3 retrospective, which will be entirely focused on the legacy of Jason Guy.
Absolutely. Mike, loving everything that you have going on, and truly when it comes to it being surreal for you, I really do strongly believe, like, to see you and Josh get out there and be part of, like, the actual press for the show, no people deserve it more. Like, you guys do such fantastic work. It's awesome getting to see all of that be a reality for us too. Dom, anything else that you wanted to get to?
No, other than to echo everything you just said, Mike, always great to have you on, and I'm sure we'll find some excuse to get you on here, whether it's to eulogize is the wrong word, whether it's to rhapsodize over Jason Guy or Daniel Reyes in some capacity, or for any other reason. You know, our door is always open.
Neither of them is dead, to be clear. No one's dead here.
If you want me to just go down the line and talk about every player in Big Brother history and talk them up like Boogie does in his final jury speech, we can do that as well. That would be a fun game.
Yeah. Well, Mike, we'll let you get out of here. I know you have another podcast coming up right around the corner. Thank you once again for being so generous with your time and for coming on with us today.
Thank you so much, guys, for having me on.
All right. Until next time, he is, of course, on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. One more BB7 podcast coming. We will wrap up this whole series before we move all of these classic rewatch podcasts into patron-only mode. To find out more about how to get involved with that, patreon.com/DomAndColin. You could be the one who lets us know where we go next with our which season to cover after we finish BB7. But until then, I think that's going to do it. And for now, I will not tell you to take care. I will instead send you over to The View, where we will hear the full interview with Janelle, Erica, and Mike Boogie. And then you guys can take care after you've listened to that. Enjoy.
I lied to each and every one of you. You all didn't know it, but you were all one big member of Chilltown. There was one big alliance, and we were smart enough to keep you in the positions we wanted to. And when you started to figure it out, is when you got evicted. Please vote like all stars and reward my gameplay.
And this vote from Will goes to Mike.
Congratulations with both votes. You are the winner of Big Brother All Stars, Mike Allen.
The screaming, the scheming, and the smooching all came to a head on last night's Big Brother, as you just saw the finale. And we have a winner. Please welcome Mike Mallon and runners up Erica Landon and Janelle Perzina.
Janelle!
Now she loves you.
everybody. Before we start the questioning, just a small live camera adjustment. Could you just move down? Move down. Move down. This is a much better seating arrangement, so I don't have to sit near you!
Wolfie is very upset. And officially, we have to congratulate you on the Big Brother win.
Thank you.
All Stars. You won $500,000.
Yes.
But some people would argue that you just rode Will's coattails to the championship seat right here. And are you going to split the money with him?
No, we're not allowed to split the money, but I'll buy him a little something.
You're going to buy him $250,000 worth of gifts?
You know, I might buy him a jet ski or something.
Now, listen, more importantly, Eric and Janelle, look this way. How are you? Now, let me just say, did you feel bad when James called you fat? Because I wanted to hurt him.
I felt really bad because I felt James was my friend when I saw that I was hurt.
And you're not fat. Look at you. You're gorgeous.
Thank you, Rosie.
I mean, what is that about? And now, how about you?
What about me? Uh-oh.
First of all, if I hear one more woman on reality TV say, it's bros before hoes, I'm going to jump off a bridge somewhere. Erica, did you actually fall for that human being next to you who was canoodling with you in the bed and depriving you of your money that was rightfully earned?
There was never any love. I mean, there was always, like, attraction and flirting and...
Yeah.
Okay, a little lust, but there was never love. I mean...
But you guys definitely had a showmance. I mean, if something was going on there under the sheets. What happened that last
kissing.
Week?
Kissing.
A little kissing.
A little kissing.
But there did you... Kissing.
Last night, though, you heard some things for the first time, and you heard the comments that Boogie here was making about you.
Yes, Mike, why don't you tell everyone what you said about Erica, who you were in bed with?
Well,
why don't we actually just play a clip? Because
even
he's going to make it sound nicer.
Wait, take a look at the sweet, the kind, the touching, the lovable Mike Boogie. Take a look. Spiritually, creme de la creme.
Showmances can be very effective for you. It kind of turned into a homance. And I'm just glad that America now knows that that Erica is in fact a hoe. So I've used that girl up for all I need. I've gotten myself in a position to win this game. And that's all she was good for.
Okay. Now,
if I may speak.
I don't know if any word will help you right now.
That's right. The girls had just gotten together and evicted my best friend, Will, and it was very traumatic, Rosie,
I know how you loved Will with your little 12-year-old, hey, buddy, you on the phone? Yeah, buddy, chill down. Hey, buddy, we're 12.
I did actually find that funny.
You found it funny?
I pretty found it funny, that part. I didn't find the whole stuff funny, but, I mean, Erica, you kind of seemed in shock last night.
And so you looked in shock,
You
Erica.
Looked like you were in shock, didn't really absorb what you had just heard today. It's got to feel a little different hearing that.
You know, actually, I knew that Mike was really, really upset when I evicted Will. And he was in the diary room for like, two hours?
2 hours.
And we were like,
yeah, she's a hoe, he said. She's a hoe. Remember him? She's a hoe. There he is with the hoe. Which makes him a hoe master, if you ask me. Nice to see you, Mike. All right.
I kind of had an idea that he was not being very positive, you know, to me in the diary room.
Did you really think that you could go in there and find someone and kind of break through the wall of Big Brother and have a relationship? I mean, we were talking about it in Hot Topics. Did you really believe that all these people in it for the game, for the money, out of all of them, you'd find, like, love?
No, I don't think I ever said that I found love. I mean, I think we goofed around, like, oh, you know, we're going to have, like, a baby together. But it was never really, like...
Never serious, just a baby. No, come on, Erica.
I mean, we were just joking around. It wasn't like, you know, like, oh, let's really go have a baby.
All right, but what about you and Will? Is that real?
Oh,
because
no.
I got to tell, in spite of his horrible, you know, Mike Boogie-like friendship, I do sort of have a teeny crush on him.
You do?
I enjoy him. I think there's something charming about him in a lot of ways. Do you like him in real life?
I do. I mean, he's really sweet. We're just really good friends. I mean, it's not romantic in any way.
No.
I don't think.
Look, yeah, there he is naked, and there's your boob on his arm, but whatever. It looks a little bit romantic to me. Now, Mike, you're in business with Ashton Kutcher. You own 1 million restaurants. Is this true?
Yeah, I have several restaurants with Ashton and Wilmer. A lot of guys have been on the show. And
so you're like a studly one of those guys hanging with the gang.
Yeah,
like
I do the thing.
I try to hang with the gang a little
you
bit.
Do.
Yeah,
did, were
I
you
do.
Worried that you wouldn't win just because people would think you didn't need the money?
I was very worried about that. That's why I was very concerned about being against, like, George in the finals.
Oh, I love Chicken George.
Yeah, he
what's
is
good
nice.
About All-Stars is they're a bunch of gamers who really respect the game, and I really felt that in the end they would give the money to the best player, and they did.
Oh, please, I'm nauseous from you. Let me just, sorry, Elizabeth. Women, I have a question. Yeah. Well, and for you too, Elizabeth, because Survivor. Why don't the women bond together on the show and go after the guys? Because you and Erica and Danielle, you could have wiped the Mike Boogie off the face of the earth. You could have done it, ladies.
You could have cut the phone line. They pinned us so far against each other, though, that it was so hard to. They pinned us against each other.
But don't you think that women are more competitive with each other than men?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because you and Danielle and Erica together, you so could have won. That Danielle is one smart cookie.
She is.
Yeah,
she's
I enjoyed her.
It's hard,
unlike
though, I think,
Mike,
for women.
But whatever.
What are you guys going to do with the money, though? I mean,
We're working on 3 restaurants in Atlanta, Georgia right now, so I'm just going to reinvest it in that.
Reinvest it. Do something smart. Okay, good.
And I'm giving my mom a car that I won.
You have a mom?
Don't try to
she's probably very embarrassed of the way you treated women on the show. And I'd like to say to Mike Boogie's mother, I don't blame you. Boys do strange things, and you're probably a lovely woman. I'd like to have you come on and do a craft segment, but I didn't enjoy the behavior of your son. Now, Janelle, you won the money from the audience vote.
Yes.
Yes. Are you going to plan a career in showbiz? Are you going
to... I have nothing planned really for entertainment. I don't know.
What are you going to do with the money? Anything fun?
Yeah, just go on a trip or something with my mom.
Yeah.
Like that.
Your mom's probably very proud of the way you played the game.
Yeah.
How about you, Erica? What did your mom say?
She hates Mike Boogie. That's all.
Well, I'd like to also invite Erica's mother onto the program. Because I feel that that would be a wonderful, wonderful show.
And then together they can just craft an I Hate Boogie blanket.
Actually, I bedazzled some t-shirts with that, but they wouldn't let me wear it today.
I think Rosie has a crush.
Maybe.
I think we've established that.
All right, Mike, you know, I don't know, we could go out drinking and we could maybe bond over some issue, but I'm very disappointed in you.
It's just, you know, and that's why we wanted you to be here, just so you can know that the disappointment is there.
But it is a great show, and you made it entertaining in your immature 12-year-old way.
I personally love the phone call. We'll see you next time, maybe. We'll see you on the next game. Maybe you guys can go on, like, another game show and win again. Thanks,
well, thank
ladies.
You,
Boogie, I don't know.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Mike, Erica, and Janelle. We'll be right back. We're hanging on.